പ്രാചകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാജ് ശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്കി ജയം നിത്യലീല പ്രവിഷ്ട വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രാജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശത ശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാജ് ശീല പ്രഭുപാദിക്കി അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശീല ഹരിദാസ് ഠാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട രാധാകുണ്ട ഗിരി ഗോവർദ്ധാനയ്ക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമയ്ക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ് പുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമയ്ക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സാമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗോർ പ്രേമാനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് വിത്ത് ദി അസംബിൾഡ് ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് വിത്ത് ദി അസംബിൾഡ് ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് വിത്ത് ദി അസംബിൾഡ് ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരുവൻ ഗൗരാംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ശ്രീല പ്രഭുപാദ് നമാമി ശുഭദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതി ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമി നിധി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതി ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരിണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണേം ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ ഓം നമോ ഭഗവതേ വാസുദേവായ സംസാരസാഗരേ മഗ്നം ദീനം മാം കരുണാനിധേ കർമ്മഗ്രാഹഗൃഹീതാംഗം മാമുദ്ധരഭവാർണവാദ് ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവദാഖ്യോയം പ്രത്യക്ഷകൃഷ്ണമേവ ഹി സ്വീകൃതോസി മയാനാഥ മുക്ത്യർത്ഥം ഭവസാഗരേ മനോരഥേ മദീയോയം സഫലാ സർവദാ ത്വയാ നിർവിഘ്നേനൈവ കർത്തവ്യം ദാസോഹം തവ കേശവ ഭവേ ഭവേ യഥാ ഭക്തി തവ ജായതേ തഥാ കുരുഷ്വ ദേവേശ നാഥസ്ത്വം നോ യദ പ്രഭോ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം യസ്യ സർവപാപ പ്രണാശനം പ്രണാമോ ദുഃഖശമനം തം നമാമി ഹരിം പരം ജന്മാദ്യസ്യ യതോന്വയാദിതരതശ്ചാർത്തേഷ്വഭിജ്ഞസ്വരാൺ തേനേ ബ്രഹ്മഹൃദായ ആദികവയേ മുഹ്യന്തി യത്സൂരയ തേജോ വാരിമൃതം യഥാ വിനിമയോ യത്ര ത്രിസർഗോ മൃഷ ധാംനാ സ്വേന സദാ നിരസ്തകുഹകം സത്യം പരം ധീമഹി ധർമ്മ പ്രോജിത കൈതവോത്ര പരമോ നിർമ്മത്സരാണം സദാ വേദ്യം വാസ്തവമത്ര വസ്തു ശിവദം താപത്രയോന്മൂലനം ശ്രീമദ്ഭാഗവതേ മഹാമുനികൃതേ കിം വാപരൈരീശ്വര സദ്യോ ഹൃദ്യവരുദ്ധ്യതേത്ര കൃതിഭി ശുശ്രൂഷുഭി തൽക്ഷണാൽ നിഗമകൽപ്പതരോർഗലിതം ഫലം ശുകമുഖാദമൃതദ്രവ സംയുതം പിബത ഭാഗവതം രസമാലയം മുഹുരഹോ രസികാ ഭുവി ഭാവുകാഹം സച്ചിദാനന്ദരൂപായാം വിശ്വോൽപത്യാദിഹേതവേ താപത്രയ വിനാശായ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ വയം നുമാ യം പ്രവ്രജന്തം അനുഭേദമഭേദകൃത്യം ദ്വൈപായനോ വിരഹ കാതരമജ്ജുഹാവാ പുത്രേതി തന്മയതയത്തരവോഭിനേതു തം സർവഭൂതഹൃദയം മുനിമാനതോസ്മി യസ്വാനുഭാവമഖില ശ്രുതിസാരമേകം അധ്യാത്മദീപമതിതിർഷദാം തമോന്ധം സംസാരിണാം കരുണയാഹ പുരാണഗുഹ്യം തം വ്യാസസൂനുമുപയാമി ഗുരും മുനീനാം നാരായണം നമസ്കൃത്യ നരം ചൈവ നരോത്തമം ദേവീം സരസ്വതീം വ്യാസം തതോ ജയമുദീരയേൽ കമനീയ കിശോരമുഗ്ധമൂർത്തേ കളവേണു കുണിതാദൃതാനനെന്തോ മമ വാചി വിജൃംഭദാ മുരാരേർ മധുരിം ന കനികാഭികാഭികാവി നമഃം വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേ ശ്രീമതേ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത സ്വാമിനിതി നാമിനേ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വതീ ദേവീം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രചാരണേ നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യ ദേശധാരിണേ ശ്രീമൽ ഗുരുചരണാരവിന്ദാഭ്യാം നമഃ. വന്ദേ നന്ദവ്രജസ്ത്രീണാം പാദരേണുമഭീഷ്ണശാം യാസാം ഹരികഥോദ്ഗീതം പുനാദിഭുവനത്രയം ഗോപീചരണാരവിന്ദ പരമാണവേ നമഃ. പീതാംബരം കരവിരാജിത ചക്രശംഖം കൗമോദകീ സരസിജം കരുണാസമുദ്രം രാധാസഹായമതിസുന്ദര മന്ദഹാസം വാതാലയേശ മനിഷം ഹൃദി ഭാവയാമി കോമളം കൂജയൻ വേണും ശ്യാമളോയം കുമാരക വേദവേദ്യപരം ബ്രഹ്മ ഭാസദാം പുരതോ മമ. മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ. സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദനാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ. ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണീം ഭഗവതീം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനീം അംബത്വാമനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണീം. നമോസ്തു ദേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ ഫുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതപത്രനേത്രാം യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണ പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപാ. പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകബാണയേ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമാം. സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർഭോക്ത ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത്. വസുദേവസുതം ദേവം കംസചാണൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും. ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥജല ഗാന്ധാരനീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുല. അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണഘോരമകര ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനീ സോത്തീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവ. പാരാശര്യവജസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കടം നാനാഖ്യാനക കേസരം ഹരികഥ സംബോധനാബോധിതം. ലോകൈ സജ്ജന ഷൽപദൈരഹര പേബീയമാനം മുദാം ഭൂയാത് ഭാരത പങ്കജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ. മുഖം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കം ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം. യം ബ്രഹ്മാ വരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുത സ്ത്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈസ്തവൈർ വേദൈർ സാംഗപദൈർ ക്രമൗപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഃ. ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമഃ. ശ്രീഭഗവാനുവാചം ത്രിവിധാ ഭവതി ശ്രദ്ധ ദേഹിനാം സാ സ്വഭാവജ സാത്വികീ രാജസീ ചൈവ താമസീ ചേതി താം ശൃണു. സത്വാനുരൂപാ സർവസ്യ ശ്രദ്ധാ ഭവതി ഭാരത ശ്രദ്ധാമയോയം പുരുഷോ യോയൽ ശ്രദ്ധസയേവ സാ. യെസ്റ്റർഡേ വെൻ വി വർ ഡിസ്കസിംഗ് അർജുനസ് ക്വസ്റ്റ്യൻ, കൃഷ്ണ സ്റ്റാർട്ടഡ് ആൻസറിംഗ്. ഫസ്റ്റ് ഓഫ് ഓൾ കൃഷ്ണ സേസ് ടു അർജുന, സ്വഭാവജം ദേഹിനാംസ സ്വഭാവജം. വാട്ട് ഈസ് ദാറ്റ് സ്വഭാവജം? സ്വഭാവജം മീൻസ് വാട്ട് എവർ വി ഹാവ് ബ്രോട്ട് വിത്ത് അസ് ഫ്രം പ്രീവിയസ് ലൈഫ്. പ്രകൃതി vasana, whatever way you address it, what is the one and the same thing. So Trividhi, Trividha Bhavadi Shraddha Dehinam So Subhavaja, Krishna is saying to Arjuna that this Shraddha is very much dependent on that vasana. Because according to the vasana, the Shraddha will develop in three different directions. Sattvikam, Rajasam, Tamasam. Isn't it? So we have seen that, that Subhavajam has a very powerful influence on the Shraddha. Then Sattviki, Rajasam, Ichedidam, Shrunu. Then Krishna started talking about Sattvana Rupa Sarvasya Shraddha Bhavati Bharata. And Shraddhamayoyam Purushaha Yoyal Shraddhasa Evasa. That third line, Shraddhamayoyam Purusha, that's very, very important. Because that Shraddha makes up a person. The whole person is nothing but Shraddha. What is inside that baggage, that's him. Nothing else. External body, hands, legs and all these are secondary things. What he is going to do in this world, what direction he will go further, all depends on that Shraddhamayoyam Purushaha, which is dependent on the Subhava or Vasana inside. So that is why we mentioned yesterday this thing called Adhyavasayam. Remember, Adhyavasayam means that the that is coming from the inside based on the decision what has been made. That means once you have decided this is what I want in life, invariably there will be a force will be built up inside each one of us, and that force will spread all over. And if you develop that, and that is what will decide everything in life. As I mentioned yesterday, if money is the, if somebody has very strong conviction inside that money is what he needs, and then all his actions and other things will be centered around that, that acquiring wealth. And similarly other things, name, fame, or followers, whatever that is, everything is inside in a very, very subtle level, that decision is there. And that nobody can deny that. And that is coming from Subhavajam. Subhav. That is that person's Subhav. So, so similarly, if somebody has decided that what he wants is self-realization, Krishna, then accordingly his decision, actions in life will also follow that. He will be centered around that, things will happen. Even though Prarabdha may bring problems to him, he will get over that. Because this powerful decision inside will take control of all the situations. All the situations. So, we gave the example that this Shraddha is therefore our basic fuel. That is our basic fuel. And even behind our sadhana, this Shraddha is working. That is what it is giving that propelling force for the sadhana also. So, Krishna mentions there that when that conviction or when that decision, the force is coming in that direction for self-realization, it will spread into the bodily level, to the mental, in the bodily platform, in the mental level, as well as in the senses everywhere. And the result is that even the genes, which we spoke yesterday, the genes, or the genetically, if there is a desire for sense gratification, even that sense gratification desire can be changed by this powerful force that's developing from inside called Shraddha. Called Shraddha. So, in order to develop this Shraddha, in the Vedic philosophy, there are few things mentioned, and that is the way to go. And that's what we talked about. First thing is the worship of the deity, and that too, which deity to worship, one. Secondly, austerities and penances, what's necessary for that. Thirdly, the food, what we consume. Fourth, above all and most importantly, our karma. Our karma. If that karma is based on knowledge, it will help. If it is in ignorance, it will act in the opposite direction also. All these are important. Therefore, body, mind and the words, everything. Shariravang manobihi, Vedam says like that, that in this, Krishna says here, that who is a Vedavit? Vedavit means that one who has put the knife on the root of the tree, of the tree of material existence. Remember, in that 15th chapter, what Krishna spoke about a tree of material existence, isn't it?
നിർമ്മാണമോ
നമ്പർ 3 and 4, yeah, that's it.
So when Krishna mentioned about that tree, we have spoken about that.
നരൂപമസ്യേഹ തഥോപലഭ്യതേ നാന്തോന്ന ചാതിർനജ സമ്പ്രതിഷ്ഠ അശ്വത്ഥമേനം സവിരൂഢമൂലം അസംഗശസ്ത്രേണ ദൃഢേന ചിത്വ.
ദാറ്റ്സ് ദാറ്റ് വേർഡ്സ്.
തതപരം തത് പരിമാർഗിതവ്യം യസ്മിൻ ഗത ന നിവർത്തന്തി ഭൂയ തം ഏവ ചാദ്യം പുരുഷം പ്രപദ്യേ യഥ പ്രവൃത്തി പ്രസൃത പുരാണി.
സോ കൃഷ്ണ ഈസ് സെയിങ് ഹിയർ that once that is asanga shastrena dridhena chitva, he said there, isn't it? So and there he says there tadapadam tad parimargitavyam yasmin gadana nivartanti bhuyam tameva chadyam purusham prabadye yada pravrti prasrada purani.
Pravrta prasrada purani.
So yastum vedasa vedavit, another place Krishna says yastum vedasa vedavit. So who is this vedavit?
One who has put the knife at the root of that tree of material existence.
So these three planes, which means
the platform of the senses, platform of the mind, and bodily platform,
in all these levels Krishna is saying here that
this influence will spread from the Shraddha that comes from there. Many things what Krishna is going to talk about from now onwards, things what we consider is not so important, and we will not give much attention to it. Such things, Krishna is going to discuss it very seriously, beginning with food, prasadam, prasadam itself, isn't it? Similarly, karma, austerities, deity whom we worship. In this chapter, these four things Krishna is going to talk about in a very seriously about it. Very important, and lot of attention is given to that. Devata, aharam, tapas, karma, or yajnam, as Krishna calls it as yajnam. In these four things, one who is pure in these four things, what will happen to his Shraddha? That's what Krishna is going to say here. So Sanatana Dharmam or Vaidya Samskaram, is these four things are the important factors. Important factors. There should be yajnam, there should be ahara shuddhi, and there should be tapas, and there should be a devata. Devata should be there. We will come to that devata, who that devata is, later. But important thing here is that mainly devata is a representation of atma inside. The atma inside is represented in the form of devata outside. So that is where this shastram or this science is taking us to. From the next verses onwards, that's where it is going. But prior to going to that, we have to understand a few more things which Krishna has mentioned before. Like we have seen earlier, that in the last chapter, that was in the chapter referred to divine and the demonic nature, I mentioned there also that these two things, divine nature and the demonic nature, is present in everybody. Is present in everybody. If you look into Upanishads also, you will see this mentioned. For example, in the Chandogya Upanishad, there is a reference to that deva, demigods and the demons fighting each other.
the demons fighting each other. So when Acharya wrote commentary on that, he mentions in there that devas actually refers to the actions of the senses, of the indriyas or senses, that have been purified by the observance of various purificatory karma. And that means people have performed purificatory processes and their senses have been purified by that process. Similarly, asura refers to, again, senses which are used to indulging in sense gratification. He gives a commentary like that in that particular instance, in Chandogya Upanishad, when they talk about demons and demigods fighting. You will see this all the time in the Bhagavatam, in the 8th canto. You will see there that there was a fighting between demons and the demigods, isn't it? In the river, in the Devasura Yudham that happened there between, and then it was then that Mahabali was defeated in that, and after that the churning of the milk ocean happened. And all that, in the 8th canto you will see that. So, he mentions there that the internal struggle inside us between the our good vasanas and the, which are the divine nature, and the bad vasanas which are the demonic nature. That's having a fight inside every one of us. We are going through that. So, while talking about this incident in Chandogya Upanishad, Acharya mentions there, this is actually referring to the fight between the demons and the demigods, which is happening. Sarva pranishu pradideham devasura sangrami na adhigala pravurta. He mentions like that. So, what was important to understand here is that asuras are those forces that drag the indriyas towards the external matters. So if our senses are dragging outside the into the world, that is asuric. That is asuric. And on the other hand, devas are those forces that draws focus these indriyas inwardly. If it is taking us inwardly, it is divine. If it is taking outwardly, it is demoniac. That is the way he explains there. And this Devasura war, or the fight between Devas and Asuras, results in the winning in the different places in different ways. So mostly that sometimes people will think that when you read a commentary like that, you will start thinking, is all stories in the Bhagavatam or in the Puranam in the same way? Is all spoken in that way? Are they not real? This question will come up. But that is, they will say, some people will say it is symbolic. They say it is symbolic. And allegorical, that's the word they use. Allegorical, isn't it? So, that decision is a very difficult decision to make. For example, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look, Puranjanobhakhyanam is an allegorical story. Prabhupada also mentions that. You can't take everything in the Puranam as it happened. Some of them are allegorical, some of them are real also. Yet the same Acharya himself, when he is talking about Kenobanishad, there is a commentary Vyakhyanam or commentary on Kenobanishad, where he says that the Paramatma or Krishna has secured victory over all the other forces, evil forces. So there he is not saying devas as symbolic. He doesn't say like that, as symbolic. So when he wrote this commentary on the commentary means Bhashyam on the Brahma Sutram also, he mentions there, just like we exist in this earthly planet, Bhulokam, he says there devas exist in the Devalokam or heavenly planets. They exist there. And they indulge in sensual pleasures more than us. And also experience defeat sometimes. They experience defeat as well as the suffering from that, from the defeat. And they also have jealousy, envy and all other things what we have in this world. So we develop detachment. We develop detachment in this world, and follow with the result of that, that inquiry for realization, self-realization comes to us. And he says there in the Brahma Sutra commentary, he says that it is possible for the demigods also to do the same thing if they want to. If they want to follow that. So what is important here is, which is real, which is not real. Real in the sense that Puranam, you can't write it off. Many things in the Puranam are absolute things. They are right things, what has happened in within a matter of time and space. But some instances, it's spoken allegorically also. So that decision is a very difficult one for us to know, except with the help of the what the acharyas have to say about that. So then they have taken this process of explaining this, that sometimes these devas and asuras, it is spoken in the form of an allegorical story in order to reveal certain higher level truths, to make us aware of the higher level truths. And that time it's called Arthavadam. You may have come across this word called Arthavadam. Arthavadam means, in order to explain something, some truth, to a higher truth, they have to resort to a process whereby through a story form, they will present it to us, like the way Narada Maharshi did that to Prachina Barhis, when he wanted to talk about the fate of the living entity, one who is absorbed in Karmagandam, what will happen to him. That is how Puranjana's story was spoken in the Bhagavadam. So Arthavadam means, in order to, this is a very important thing, this Arthavadam. Arthavadam you will find in Puranam, in many, many places. It's called Arthavadam. So Arthavadam means that story is not a mere story as such. It serves as a tool, just like a tool, to enable to expose a higher level of principle. Higher level of principle. So in the Bhagavad stories also, this Chandokya story falls into that category. This story in the Chandokya Upanishad is going to that category. So there he says here that the devas or demigods means that a specific kind of life they lead, engaged in sensual happiness, and jivas, and also at the same time demoniac forces, they drive us away from the truth, means towards the world, outside world, towards the outside world. And this personification of these forces is what we call as the demons and demigods. So that is why you remember this chapter what we discussed, which one? Devasura Sambad Vibhaga Yogam, divine and the demoniac nature. What has happened there? Krishna has spoken certain qualities there, isn't it? Abhaya Sattva Samshuddhi onwards, those 26 qualities. What is referring to the divine nature? And then Krishna started talking about similarly a list of demoniac qualities as well. That was in the last chapter. We have come across that. Vanity, pride, anger, harsh words and ignorance, all are asuric tendencies, isn't it? So Deviga Sampatti and Asuri Sampatti, divine wealth and demoniac wealth in that sense. So Krishna also mentioned there, Pravrtinja Nivrtinja Janana Vidurasura Na Jaivam Nabi Chacharo Na Satyam Deshu Vidyade. While talking about this demoniac nature, he said, they do not know what to do and what not to do. And Pravrtinja Nivrtinja Janana Vidurasura Na Chaivam Chabi Chacharo Na Satyam Teshu Vidyade. They do not have any truthfulness, and they exhibit, Krishna said, exhibit beastly qualities, animalistic qualities. Beastly qualities they exhibit. So, and he mentions there that anything that helps a person to get liberated or moksham or liberation, Krishna says, from the bondage. Bondage means this worldliness, attachment to the material world, is Krishna addressed that as Devi Sampatta or divine nature. And Krishna also said there, any means that bind us to the material life or material world is Asuri Sambhata or demonic nature. These two things we have seen in the last chapter. Then he told Arjuna, don't worry about it, you are born with the divine nature. He told him like that. So from this we can understand that this divine nature and demonic nature is in the case of a jiva. Jiva has got this divine and demonic nature. So we are all conscious of this also, that in our own life, if you look at, you will see that constantly there is a battle inside going on, is it not? You know that, what I am saying, isn't it? Some things we do, sometimes we want to do good things and we are trying to do it. On the other side, we are also tempted to go into the sinful nature, sinful way of activities, sinful activities. So one side is pulling towards divine nature and other side is pulling towards the demonic nature. In all of us, it's there. Most of the time, the demonic nature wins, not the divine nature. It's the demonic nature, most of the time, that wins, isn't it? So, the important thing is, we try very hard, but often we fail. Sometimes we succeed, to some extent, to a very small extent, we succeed from that. So, we keep on attempting, at the same time, it is not going in the direction we want all the time. Because we ourselves understand that, how demonic nature is operating within all of us, is it not? You have to only scratch the surface a little bit, then it will come out. Just like you can see, however you may say, people are very nice, friendly, and divine nature they have cultured and all that. As soon as there is a crisis in the country, you will see we will act like beasts. There won't be any concession or any consideration for others. It will be that beastly quality in us will come out at that time. And we'll become very, very, very inimical to each other. And it is impossible to remember that all this, I'm not this body and I'm not this and I'm not that. That will be forgotten straight away. That demonic nature, that means demonic nature has that strength all the time. We are always on the edge. It is in that way. So this is happening. The thought waves also inside is in the same way it is happening. So they keep wrestling each other, the good thoughts and the bad thoughts. So they are called the vritti. This is what vritti means. Chittavritti means this. Bad vritti and the good vritti. Good chittavritti and the bad chittavritti. And day after day, it's fighting inside us. It is fighting inside us, isn't it? So vritti means it's like a flow or a current. And chittavritti means flow of thoughts. Flow of thoughts. So there are hundreds of vrittis passing, chittavrittis going through us every moment, all the time. So fast they come through and passes through us, isn't it? Out of most of the thoughts that comes through, if you look yourself, you will see hardly 10% are noble or good chittavritti. Majority of them are, and that means which is referred to as devas, demi or the divine. And the bad vrittis are the asuras. Bad vrittis are the asuras. So the question will come, why does this asuric tendency, asuric vritti is coming to us? Why does that happen? Why I am saying these things is, before we go in to understand the Shraddha properly, which is the opposite side of the mind, we have to go through this mind, how it functions, how the mind affects us in our... So normally you can see when you look into your own mind, this asuric vritti is the priority there, or which is the prime factor. 99% of the time, the asuras are active inside. And rarely, you see the devas coming. And we experience
a great shanti or bliss at that time, when that comes in, isn't it? And our we feel experience that because our heart becomes very serene at that time. And then again the darkness comes and it goes away. It goes away. So we want the we want to retain that divine nature, but it does not happen. Asuric nature takes over, and at the same time we find it that it is becoming very difficult. Asuras controls everything, our thoughts very powerfully. So if you have a little bit of introspection on this topic, you will see that the because of this asuric nature, our conscience, we are always feeling no particularly any fulfillment. No fulfillment in the conscience. Something is missing all the time. You feel that in life, that there is not getting anywhere. It's going on like this. But helplessly, we carry on with our life. Helplessly, we carry on with our life. And very often, it gets very murky and very unsettled sometimes. You can see, if you observe, you take notice of your own mind, how it is acting in different days, at different times, how it gets affected by the world outside, and with our own vasanas inside, how it is disturbing inside. Sometimes it gets so disturbed and so distressed also, and rarely you feel any blissful state. Most of the time it is going through a distressful conditions, isn't it? So when we a lot of grief comes from various relationships or activities, and then we lose our, sometimes we feel like crying and you lose your sanity also in that state, isn't it? Then we sometimes things go wrong and we doesn't want to repeat it again, doesn't want that to happen again. And the resolution, you may have a very strong resolution about that. And we try to dampen this powerful thought waves that's coming and giving us trouble. But we might succeed in doing things once or twice, but again you fall. Again you fall back into the same problem what you have been trying to free yourself from before, isn't it? So unconsciously, you are swept away by these forces, by these asuric forces. And that means you can see at that time desire, anger, lust, greed, jealousy, all other things, kamam, krotham, moham, madam, alsaryam, all these things coming back again. You will never be able to wipe them out from inside. And you can see when they keep coming back, that is an indication of the asuri vasana inside. Asuri vasana inside. So the asuri vasanas and get a, these vasanas when they develop, it get entered into our karmic account. Karmic account, and as in, or there is a account there where it is entered into that ledger or whatever we call it or file, in the form of sin, papa, papa vasana it is called. Once any of those emotions, any of these ones, lust, anger, greed, jealousy, envy, all of them has come inside, it gets inside and it gets entered there in the record as a vasana there. So, so then it turns into action. Then it turns into action. Krishna says this, is it not? In the Bhagavad Gita he mentioned, he asked this question, when Arjuna asked the question in the third chapter, Athakena prayitvayam pavam jarati purusha anichanabhi varshneya baladiva niyojida. Third chapter, I think it is the 36th verse. Third chapter. Arjuna asked this question. Remember that? Athakena prayitvayam pavam jarati purusha anichanabhi varshneya baladiva niyojida. This is that, what that verse is talking about. That our chittavritti gets built up inside. And mostly it is the demoniac vasanas that they get built up. And that thought waves is enough. Once the thought waves have come, they get recorded inside in the form of sinful thought waves. And that will force us to act later on. That's what Krishna is saying there. That athagenam prayuktoyam pāpam charati purusha anichannabhi varshneya baladiva niyojida. This is how it develops.
So Krishna says to Arjuna that if these vasanas are strong inside, then there will be papam, sinful activities. It will turn into karmam later. It will turn up. Once it has developed inside that vasana, it will develop into karmam in the form of envy, jealousy, or pride, or anger, greed. All these things will come out from us. In some form, it will develop. And each and every person, even a jnani, conducts himself according to his natural tendency, isn't it? So, jiva also, from none other than the prakriti, apart from the prakriti itself, how can he push back this force that prakriti is imposing on him? See, prakriti is the one which pushing the thought waves through us. And these thought waves develops into vasanas inside. Chittavritti turns into samskaram and then to vasana. While living in this world, it is unavoidable. These chittavrittis will happen and they'll get strengthened day by day, and it will eventually turn out to be very powerful samskaram and then finally as vasana. Once it has become vasana, it has got life. That means it will act. Vasana will create the problem inside. You won't be able to stop. You won't even know it, that's what it is doing. And then you keep on doing things here, thinking that it's all bhakti, 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 bhakti. But vasana will be doing its own way, things that it is happening. So, what did Krishna say? What is the solution to this problem? This is the most important thing, what Krishna says there. In the Bhagavad Gita, what he said that because it is like that, what Krishna has done was, he said, I created these various occupations. Remember that? Varnashrama dharma. I've created to curtail this vasanas, not building up. How Varnashrama dharma stops this building up? This is the interesting question. Krishna says Varnashrama dharma was created for this purpose, so that these vasanas, what is inside us, it doesn't build up unnecessarily. To keep it down. To keep it down. How is it down? Because in their routine life, in the Vedic samskaram, your daily life is more important than a big project what you are going to do in life. In daily life, how you manage life, that is more important. That's why they have given a lot of importance to nishta, anishtanam, daily program, a daily fixed program to do that, for this reason only. That so Krishna says there in the Bhagavad Gita at that time, gunakarma vibhagasha chaturvarnam maya srishtam, isn't it? He says there. So generally when we read that, Krishna said, four classes of people, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya and Shudra, and we are all Brahmanas. Very simply, you put them all into, because that's the best one, isn't it? So, Krishna laughs at us. He's saying to us that it's not so simple as we think about it. Chadurvarnam maya srishtam, Krishna says, based on that, gunam and karmam. That means that baggage, what we brought with us. And if you can change the baggage, you can become. But changing the baggage is not so easy. It's not so easy. So Krishna is saying there that while discussing that, we mentioned this. He said there that on a gradual level, on a step-by-step basis, he said it is possible to get this growing of the vasanas inside, to stop it in a normal way. For this, for example, therefore he talked about what is called Swadharmam. Remember that? Swadharmam. Swadharmam, Krishna mentions there, Swadharma Parinishthita, he says in one place in the Bhagavad Gita. You have to be fixed in Swadharmam. In the 18th chapter, Krishna will again stress this point, Swadharmam. Swadharmam. That, and if he leaves his Swadharmam and adopts somebody else's Dharmam, Krishna says, that then prakriti will not let him function properly. Will not function properly in his adopted swadharmam. Suppose a person has qualifications for to be like a, he is a brahmana by nature, And if he decides to be a kshatriya and he tries to act like a kshatriya, then the material nature will not allow him to act like a kshatriya. I know all these things are not relevant today to our life because there is no varnam, no ashramam, nothing. It's a crazy society. But knowing this is good, because if you know this, then you know where things have gone wrong. Is it not? But when you don't know these things, you're always thinking, why can't I be anyone in the spiritual life? Or you think something different, then in your mind you start making up things. But that is not allowed. Krishna has told us before, ya shastra vidhimul srijya vartade kama karada. Tasmal shastram pramanam de karya karya vivasthido. So if you accept that verdict Krishna has given in the last chapter, we have to follow it through what Krishna has to say about it. What Krishna is saying to us is that, look, I created this varnashrama dharmam for only with this intention that you can keep this law, which one, this growing of this vasanas inside. How is that done? The way it is done is that, he said, you will act according to your vasana. If you accept that, you belong to that varnam. Suppose one has that quality is what Krishna has spoken for a brahminical quality, then he is a brahmana. He is a brahmana. And similarly, one who has got that nature of a vaishya, and he should not act like a brahmana. He should consider himself as a vaishya. In which case, if he live with that understanding, this asurik vasana will not build up inside. That is Krishna's point. Because little by little, the vaishya vasanas inside will get exhausted through that. But instead, if he take brahminical way of life and pose himself as a brahmana in that way, if he start functioning, what will happen is, Krishna is saying here, that if he leaves his swadharmam and adopts another one, impelled by this impression, which impression? Thinking that, oh, the brahmana is a higher dharmam, mine is a lower dharma, I am a vaishya, people are not accepting me as a higher authority, or I am a shudra, so they are thinking of me lower, so therefore let me become a brahmana and go to the market and get a thread for 5 pence and put it on and says to everybody, I am a brahmana, I had my second initiation and everything. Krishna says to us, what will happen in that case is, he says, the prakriti will not let him function properly in his adopted dharma, because he doesn't have that vasana inside. You see how important Shraddha is? That Shraddha is so much dependent on the vasana inside. So if you try to change your subtle body externally from outside, where internally in the subtle body the vasanas are, say for example, if the vasanas are for a vaishyas life, way of life, or a shudra way of life, and if you make that person say, think, that, or if he thinks that, let me become a brahmana for whatever reason he is thinking in the society, and he starts acting like a brahmana, what will happen to him is, prakriti will not allow him to function properly in his adopted dharma. He will not be able to do it properly. So, two things happens here. One, he messes up everybody's life by acting in the wrong way, without, because he doesn't have the vasanas of a brahmana, instead he has the vasanas of a vaishya. So he will mess up proper brahmana's life also. That means he will become a disturbance in the society, number one. Number two, what else happens? He is destroying himself. If he had acted properly as a vaishya, then his own vasanas will leave him after a while. So society will lose the contribution, what he would have normally contributed as a vaishya in his original occupation, that will not happen. Therefore, his own swadharma seems not so good, and by switching over to another dharma, seemingly more remarkable dharma, he has given trouble to others as well. So that is why Shreyanso Dharmo Vigunan Paradharmal Sonishtidal. If you look at that chapter, you will see Krishna saying there. What's the number? 1847. That is it. Yeah. Shrayan Swadharmo Vigunal Swadharma So Paradharmal Sonishtidal Swabhava Niyadam Karma Kurvan Nabnodi Kilbisham. Kurvan Nabnodi Kilbisham. And that is a very unusual statement from Krishna, isn't it? After Krishna is pushing that very strongly in the third chapter also. And here again Krishna is stressing the same point. He has spoken about the same thing earlier in the second or third chapter. He mentions this while talking about karma, or fourth chapter, I don't know. Where he, when we are talking about this Varnashrama Dharmam, he mentions that again there. That if you, whatever vasanas you have come with, you should act based on that. Do not change. Because if you change, you are upsetting the whole system. Upsetting the whole system. So, and the way Krishna spoke, it creates a very strong impression on Arjuna at that time. Because you have to remember, Arjuna wanted to take sannyasam in the beginning. Is it not? And he said that, what's the point in fighting this war? Should I kill my friends and relatives and my teachers and my family members and all that? I'm going to take sannyas, he said, and go away from here. He said, I do not desire, begging for alms is better than this, he said, going and begging. So at that time, that was going away from Swadharmam. Arjuna was going away from Swadharmam. So, and he also mentioned there that Krishna mentions this later on, that if you move away from your Swadharmam, that will create fear. Remember when Krishna mentions that in the Bhagavad Gita? You see, all these are connected to each other. You can't independently take anything separately from Bhagavad Gita and say that, oh, this verse says like this, that's it, everything. No, they're all interconnected. Now we are talking about fear. Where is fear coming from? Fear comes from this. Krishna is saying to us that what is that fear? Fear is, he says, the fear has to go, and the fear comes from following somebody else's dharma, Krishna says. That's where fear coming from. And it will lead to greater fear, Krishna says there. And what is that fear? Fear is this. Fear means that always worrying about things. Thinking about what will happen to me. What will become of me tomorrow? What's going to happen? This anxiety all the time. And this will keep on lingering on in life. And this fear will only go when we finally settle ourselves where we are convinced that nothing can ever go wrong anymore. Till we get settled in that state, this fear will chase us all the time. All the time. Nothing will disturb us. Everybody is going through the same thing, this fear, all the time in life, is it not? We have anxiety about tomorrow, day after. What will happen at the old age? What will happen if I fall sick? What will happen? Constantly fearing, fearing, fearing. This is our existence in this world. It will never leave us. Krishna is saying, is you have to reach a state where you will not feel this fear anymore, and that can only happen when nothing will shake you anymore, shake us anymore. And that state is called moksham. That is liberation. That is liberation, which is capable of providing the jiva a state which is tranquil. That means there's no more thought waves coming anymore inside, and there is no more movement, anything happening there. So as long as something is existing, that means if I feel that something is existing foreign to me, outside me, and it is different from me, then I will have this fear all the time. What is that going to do for me? And will that disturb my peace in life? And when that situation exists, that I am seeing something separated from me, something externally but separated from me, when that exists. Now, this is a very interesting subject if you give attention to it. That when your attention has fallen always on this understanding, this is called Dvaitam. Dvaitam is this. that separately from you so many things are existing. That's where it's coming from. Other persons existing, other objects existing, world existing, so many things are existing separately from me. This understanding, and this is the concept or differentiation or duality that says, I am the one entity and there is a second entity existing separately from me. So this word Dvaitam comes from Dvi. Dvi means two. That's from the word Dvai. Dvi came the English word two. From the same Dvi. They are not different. They are the same word, but due to the language it changed in that way. So Dvaitam creates fear. This is the first thing to know. Who said this in the Bhagavatam? Kavi Maharshi said this. If you look, you will see Kavir Vacha, first verse. Bhayam Didiyal Abhinivesha Tasyal Ishadabedasya Vibaryayo Smriti. That verse. Bhayam Dvidiyal. Dvidiya means Dvaitam. Second, there is a second thing existing outside me. That understanding. If you have Dvaitam, you have to have fear. Fear is a part of Dvaitam. Dvaitam won't allow you to become fearless. Dvaitam always goes with fear. That's what he said there. Dvidiya means Dvaitam. Bhayam Dvidiyal Abhinivesha Tasyal Ishad Abhedasya Vibaryayo Smriti. Yes. That's right. So, there you can see that. That Dvaitam, this Dvaitam, when it is there, is when Dvaitam goes away from inside, that state is fearless state. Fearless state. So, all in the Acharya's commentaries on the Brahma Sutram, Bhagavad Gita, Bhashyam, Upanishads, everywhere, that this experience is called state of Abhayam. Abhayam means no fear. Fearlessness state, Abhayam. Krishna talks about that as the first quality in the divine nature, isn't it? Abhayam, fearlessness. Abhaya Sattva Samshuddhi Jnana Yoga Vivasthiti. He mentions there Abhayam. So this Abhayam, this principle is discussed in the Upanishads. Upanishads discuss this. You will see this in the Taittiriya Upanishad, in the Brihadaranyam, in both these Upanishads, these things are discussed, that separately existing anything from you will cause fear. Then, if there is anything whatsoever which is foreign to myself, then I will be in a fearful state. Only if there exists another thing, if another thing exists, then fear will arise towards that second thing. That second thing will create fear in my mind. In my mind. But as soon as one has come out of Dvaitam, this fearful state will disappear. Fearful state will disappear. This you will understand this when you go a little bit more further. How it disappears. That's more interesting than this. How does the fear disappear? When you understand that, that when this fearless state, how does it come to us? When this second object is taken out from inside. Upanishads have not left us to draw these conclusions on our own. They say that this state of freedom from this Dvaitam itself is the state of Abhayam, fearlessness. Taittiriya Upanishad also, there are three mantras there, talks about this state of what they call it as this state of Brahmanandam, or what they call it as the supreme bliss, Anandam, Anandam state. Therefore they use the word Anandam for that. That fearlessness state is called Anandam or bliss. And there he mentions there that that is beyond the mind and the words, beyond the mind and the words. Such a person will never be afraid, who is in the state of that Anandam. So that is why in the Upanishads, when they talk about that, there is a whole chapter is called Anandavalli. Anandavalli is the chapter titled itself, Anandavalli. So there he is saying here that he reaches that state of Brahmanandam, and that state is, this is a conversation between Varuna and Bhrigu, Anandavali. Varuna and Bhrigu. Bhrigu goes to Varuna and asks him about it. And Varuna talks to him various things. Go and find out yourself, he says. That's how he sends him back. Then he comes back with different answers. First Annamayam, Pranamayam, Manomayam, Vijnanamayam, and finally comes to Anandamayam. When he comes to Anandamayam, Varuna says to Bhrigu, that's it. That's nothing more than that. Every time Bhrigu goes back to forest and inquires about it. So, there it has been spoken in that Anandavali, which is also called Bhriguvali sometimes. There it is mentioned like that. And these statements cover both time and space. And in the Upanishads that's talking about that is Kathachana and Kuthachana. Kuthachana. In other words, what they're saying that this, when this state comes, time and space is no bearing anymore. Do you know what I'm saying? Time and space is only when you are on a mental platform. Once you are released from the mental platform, time and space will not be there and they will not frighten us anymore. At the moment, it is realization. Basically, what Upanishad is saying is that if you don't get to that state of realization, whatever means, that process what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, this fearlessness state won't happen to a person. Because if I am limited to the body, and I am always identifying with the body, means what? I am in the state of Dvaitam. Is it not? Suppose I am identifying with the body. What does that mean? If I identify with the body, for me, you exist in your body. You exist in your body, that means Dvaitam exists in me. And as much as Dvaitam exists in me, I am fearful. Fear will not leave me. So Krishna is saying to us that the Upanishad is, Taittiriya Upanishad is saying to us that the only way to free yourself from this fearful state is to know that a second thing is not existing. That has to go from inside. And it's not so easy to get rid of that from inside. That second thing is causing the problem. A second thing existing in this, in the world. Second, that second thing means there's so many second things existing outside me, isn't it? So that includes so that is why that the it mentions in Brihadaranyam also, it mentions there in the last few mantras of a section called Sharirika Brahmanam. That's what it is addressed there. There is a description of an Alpajnani, self-realized soul, and he mentions there that his Atma is none other than Brahman. Atma has become one with the Brahman. And there he is addressed as Ajaram. Ajaram means that he has ageless, no Jara. Jara, you remember Jara? Old age we say. Birth, death, old age and disease. What is this old age? Old age is this, that Jara. Jara is the old age. And in that state, there is no old age. It is ageless. You can't experience age anymore. Today we are experiencing age, isn't it? I was young, I was a boy, I was a young man, I'm an old man, and aging is continuously happening in me. But if that understanding goes away, that means out of the birth, death, old age and disease, old age is that one, this aging business, aging. And if you are not convinced, they will send you the magazine when you are 50, age concern. They'll convince you that you are senior citizen and they'll recognize you. And if you become 100, the queen will give you the send you a birthday card or something. If you're not convinced still. All these things are going on. But rishis are telling us that's not the route to go. Go in the other direction. Who is aging? Where is this aging happening? It's all opposite to what the rishis have taught us. Rishis are saying to us that Ajaram. Ajaram means this Jara stops. Jara goes away from inside. Amaram. Amaram means there is no death anymore. Deathlessness. Agelessness and deathlessness. And Abhayam is also included in that list. When self-realization happens, Krishna, Upanishad is saying to us, it's not only freedom from the old age and death,
it's also freedom from fear. Abhayam, Ajaram, and finally the Amaram. Abhayam, Ajaram, Amaram. All the three things are together.
And he says there, one who recognizes
his Atma as Brahmam, he is the one who is fearless. So we have to come to that recognition of ourselves. Now you will notice this by going further in this, how important it is, self-realization, realizing the self. So this Abhayam or fearlessness, in another term you can call it as moksham or liberation, because freedom from fear is liberation. And so Abhayam is moksham, and Bhayam or fear is samsaram, material existence, isn't it? So material existence means what? This fear all the time. All the time fearful. What's going to happen tomorrow? What's going to happen at the old age? What will happen to me? It is always working inside in a subtle level. All of us. Nobody can deny that. And because this, when the fear becomes a lot stronger, that's when people go and take shelter of alcohol and things like that. They go and get drunk to forget it, so that this fear is not disturbing them. Isn't it? So this Bhayam and Abhayam are the two opposite things. We'll go very slowly in this, because a lot of things what Krishna is talking about are quite subtle things, and if we don't go in a slow pace, you will not get it when it is spoken. So Abhayam or the Bhayam must be opposite to Moksham. Just like Abhayam opposite is Bhayam. Moksham opposite is Samsaram. Isn't it? But Abhayam and Moksham are one and the same thing. Similarly, Bhayam and Samsaram is one and the same thing. Samsaram, when it manifests in us, it's Bhayam. Abhayam, if it manifests in us, it is Moksham. So you can see this, that Bhayam is the opposite of Moksham. Is it not? So Moksham means liberated state. And this Moksham, sometimes when it is spoken in the Bhagavadam, you will see this, that it is the bondage, is the opposite of Moksham. Bondage, isn't it? Bandham, Moksham. Krishna uses the word Bandham, Moksham. If you look into the 11th or 12th chapter, Bandho Mukta Idi Vyakya Gunado Mena Vastuda Gunasya Maya Mulatwal Name Mokshona Bandhanam, Krishna says in one place. Name Mokshona Bandhanam. So Bandham Moksham, when we talk different words, always the opposite thing also we have to take into our consideration. When you talk about Bandham, the opposite is Moksham. Similarly, when you talk about Abhayam, the opposite is Bhayam. If you talk about Moksham, the other opposite is also Samsaram. Bandham Moksham is generally spoken together. Bandham and Moksham is spoken together. Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandham mokshayoho. Another place in the Bhagavatam says. Manam eva manushyanam karanam bandham mokshayoho. So manushya, or human being, the cause of bondage and liberation is the mind. That's what Krishna is saying there to Uddhava. Mana eva manushyanam karanam bandham mokshayoho. So we also say samsara bandham. Bondage due to the material existence. Is it not? So when we have already got this birth now, this body has come to us. Is it not? So when the end comes, at the time of death, when we leave this body, when we shed this body, we want to avoid getting into another body again. That's what our goal is it not? We don't want to accept another body, because we know that if you get another body, that will also be a temporary thing. Just like this body, even though with all its faults, if we can keep it going, we would like to, but that's not possible. It will go. So when this body, because that is the nature of this body, and there is no one has any control over it, and therefore we know very well, when this body goes, another body will come, and we don't want that, another body again. So that body, getting another body, is called bandham. bondage. And if you don't get another body, it is called moksham, liberation, isn't it? So, remember, punaravi jananam, punaravi maranam, punaravi janani jadare shainam. We know what will happen if you have to accept another body, going to another womb of another mother and staying there 10 months, all the miseries attached to that, growing up again as a boy or a girl or human body or whatever body we got it, and then the hell all related to that. Iti samsare bahu dustare kripaya pare pahi murare. Addressing Krishna, Acharya is praying to him that this samsaram, material existence, is the most distressful thing. Please show mercy on us. He said like that, isn't it? So, and this is called bhayam. This material existence is bhayam. And that bhayam, this fear of accepting another body, Krishna calls it as mahal bhayam. Fear of all the greatest fear. Suppose somebody asks you, what is your greatest fear in life? If you are little intelligent, the answer will be accepting another body is the greatest fear. This body, you can't do anything anymore with it. It has to go through its cycle now. Prarabdham has matured, materialized it now in the form of this body. If you are intelligent enough and if you have accepted what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, then you know that this body, there is not a lot you can do with it. It has come now. And it will go its own way. Whatever you may try to do with it, it cannot be fixed. It has to suffer through or go through the process, what is destined, what is decided, and eventually it will die and go. But then again another one is going to come. And that is the fear. And Krishna calls it as Mahadbhayam. Greatest of all the fear. Krishna is talking from a very intelligent point of view. It is for people who are intelligent, this answer. If somebody says, I don't believe in another birth, that is up to you. That, what can you say about that? But if you accept what Krishna is saying, that you are changing the body, dehinosmin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jana tadha dehandra praptir dhirastatrana mukhyadi. What is the greatest fear in this body? Is about accepting another body after death. That is the greatest fear. So that is that greatest fear Krishna said when he said in the Bhagavad Gita, Sulpam apyasya dharmasya trayade mahado bhayal. You remember that? In the Bhagavad Gita. So you may ask this question, what is that mahado bhayat? Mahado bhayat, Krishna is referring to this one thing, accepting another body. Read that verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Sulpam apyasya dharmasya trayade mahado bhayat. Krishna says there. What's the number? 240. Sulpam apyasya dharmasya trayade mahato bhayad. When you read that verse, how do you understand about that mahato bhayad? What did you think that mahato bhayad is referring to? Let's have a look at that. 240, Krishna is saying that, Neha vikrama nashosti pratyavayona vidyade sulpam apyasya dharmasya trayade mahado bhayat. Now, in this endeavor, there is no loss of diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. What did you think when you read that verse? What that fear is talking about? We have been thinking, oh, that means you become very bold and courageous, you don't feel fear anymore. You can take on this world and act with fearlessly. That's not how it is. That this fear existing in all of us, all the time, is this, that I don't want to come back again. I don't want to come back again here. I don't want to accept another body because I know what I've gone through one whole life. That's enough for me to learn that, is it not? So, this salpam apyasya dharmasya trayade mahado bhayat. Mahado bhayat means referring to this, that this fear of accepting another body. Fear of accepting another body. So that is why
when Krishna mentioned there, he also says there that karmam, he took karmam on that. That is where this is referring to. That how karmam is binding us in that way. In the sense that when you perform karmam, Krishna calls it as kamya karmam. Kamya karma means with a desire for results. Fruitive activity. And or something that is self-oriented desire. And that is the one which binds us, the jiva, to the material existence. To the material existence, to the samsaram, or material existence is coming from the fruitive activity. So therefore, he told us in the first six chapters, and later on in the 18th chapter also, Krishna uses the word called naishkarma siddhi. Naishkarmam. Naishkarmam means that that will help you to untie this bondage. Karmam, which is fruitive activity, binds us. Naishkarmam unties the bondage. Naishkarmam unties the bondage. Therefore, this naishkarmam, karmam without, which is not a fruitive activity, it offers protection from this Mahat Bhayam, what Krishna has spoken about before. So you will see there this fear of worldly life, which he calls it as Bhayam, that is coming from material existence, samsaram, and this Mahat Bhayam, what Krishna has used in the Bhagavad Gita, they are referring to the one and the same thing. Krishna calls it as Mahal Bhayam. So in order to get ourselves freed from that Mahal Bhayam, which is coming from accepting another body, and the Samsara Bhayam, or the fear of material existence, fear of worldly life, Krishna is saying here, that's why in the first six chapters, Krishna referred to all the Bhayam that comes from the Karmam. And in the final chapter, in the 18th chapter, Krishna spoke about Naishkarmyam Siddhi. And Naishkarmyam, he has also spoken in the 4th and 5th chapters. If you look, you will see there, Naishkarmyam. In the Bhagavadam also mentioned, Naishkarmyam abhi achyuda bhava varjidam, nyashobhade jnanamalam niranjanam. In the first canto, you will see this verse. Naishkarmyam abhi achyuda bhava varjidam, nyashobhade jnanamalam niranjanam. That Naishkarmyam must carry on with Krishna consciousness, bhakti, with bhakti. And that is Bhagavata Dharmam. Naishkarmyam with bhakti is called Bhagavata Dharmam. These words, you have no other substitute. You got to use those words itself. So, when this, suppose you have got released or untied from your fear, then this jiva is in a state of liberation, moksham. Liberated state, isn't it? So, if you are always in the bondage state, that means you have to come back again. Another body again. If you are in the bonded state. And continue this lingering on, this samsaram or material existence again. So, the fear is over, or the possibility that he might bind us to another such a body after death. Now, let's look at this way. When we leave this body, what all types of fear we have? First fear, do I have to come back here again? That's the top of everything. Top of everything, that's the first fear. Where do I go from here? I mean, if somebody tells us we are all going to Golokam, it's fine. But but after we left, we can't ask that person who have told you, and you told me that I'm going to Golokam, but I'm going to end up somewhere else. So there's no chance of going back and asking that question, isn't it? But this one thing is very clear, that body after death, what body? That's the next question, isn't it? An offshoot from this fear is the fear of Naragam, hell. It's an offshoot from this. First fear, what body? That's number one fear. Second fear, I have done a lot of wrong things in this life. What I know I have done, I have to get punished for that. I know I have not been punished yet. It's on its way. So that means
I may have to go to hell. That is the second fear. First fear, that I have to accept another body, number one. Number two, what is going to happen to all the reactions of my karmam here, what I have done here. So, if you look into life after death, in one instance, the next body. And if you go further and further, at the other end is the hell. Hell is one end, and the next body is one end. In between, we will be going through a lot, between these two things. So, and we know very well that Naragaloka Varnana, or the description of the hellish planets in the Bhagavadam, tells us there will be horrendous torture there. Even this body, what we have left here, is not capable of experiencing those hellish situations. It cannot handle that, it cannot withstand that. So therefore, Bhagavadam says, they'll give you another body at that time, which is called Yatana Deham. Yatana Deham, the name of itself is a body given to us to go through that punishment of the in the hell, what we have to go through. So, we have a bundle with us, a baggage. We have done a lot of wrong things in this life, and it has to come back to us. If you accept the loss of karma, isn't it? It has to come back to us. When it will come back, how it will come back, all these are questions that will be answered in this scale, from the next birth, next body, to the right up to the hellish, going to the hellish, to the hellish planets, isn't it? So that is why it's called, because this torture that is given at the in the hellish planets cannot be endured by this human type of body, they have given us a body which can withstand that punishment and suffer through that. That is why this particular name in the Shastram called Yatana Shariram or Yatana Deham, it is called Yatana Deham. So, so in this... if material existence, if you take into account, we have one fear constantly with us about after death what will happen, which is the samsara material existence. We have enough problems in this world itself with us about our life in this world, causing enough anxiety. Lot of people are concerned about this life in this world, what is going to happen. Never has time to go further, next one. They only got time here to think about it. But those who have accepted this life, this is how it is, nothing can be done here. There's not a lot you can do about it. Let it come and we will live with it, what can we do? But then you will start thinking little bit about the next life. Many people don't think about the next life. This you will see when we get there, they say. That's their answer. But Krishna is talking to us that first you think about this, don't worry about this life. This life is finished, there's nothing you can do here. Already you got a body like this, what more can you do about it? And this body's nature is trouble from beginning to end, one form or the other. So therefore, when Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, he mentioned this like this, Sulpam apyasya dharmasya trayade mahado bhayat. So your execution of dharmam is to deal with this life after death. Not about this life in this world. Execution of dharmam is for that purpose, to deal with the life after death. Because that is, Krishna is saying to us, should be our greatest concern today. Not about this life in this world. This life in this world is finished, there's nothing you can do about it. We have come here with this body, everybody has got different types of bodies, and a lot of things are already decided, what diseases come, when it should come, whether it will get cured or not, and when, eventually when you leave this body and go. What is there much you can, there's nothing much you can do about it. That's already decided everything, is it not? So, it is not very good intelligence to put all your energy in sorting out this body. Rather, higher intelligence is to avoid accepting another body. That is why when Krishna talks about dharmam, he gives more stress on this point. Dharmam is for avoiding the next body. Sulpam apyasya dharmasya trayade mahado bhayat. And that is that greatest fear among the intelligent community.
Brahminical community, intelligent community, their fear is about the next life, not about this life. Not about this life. This life is not an issue. It is finished now, it's going on. It will go one day and finish and go. Body will be shed and gone. Why worry so much about it? Accept it as it is, Krishna has given us. But next life is more important than this life today. That's the way Krishna is talking about it. So, all the Acharya's commentaries, all the great Acharya's, Shankaracharya, Ramanuja, all of their commentaries when you read, they have given importance to the next life, not about this life. This life they are not taken very important. All Shastram also, at their Bhashyam commentary also, references, they talk to you about fearful and torturous to mean being pushed down to Naraga. If it words come, suppose for example, in your next life, you accept a body. And if your sinful activities in this life is not very heavy, if you have not done very heavy, high sinful activities in this life, then there is no possibility of going to the hellish planets. You will accept another body, that may happen, but you may not go to hellish planets. That option is there. We don't make the decision, that decision is made in the higher level. So everybody don't go to hellish planets. Suppose someone who has lived a life reasonably Krishna conscious, then a life like that, then the possibility is that he may not go to hell. But he has not become perfect in Krishna consciousness. In which case what will happen? He will have to accept another body. But he may not go to hell. So this, so hell means torture. A lot of torture will happen there, like mentioned in the Bhagavatam. So in that scale, from that Naragam right up to the best birth, another body you have to take it, but on a very higher birth. That is the best thing to happen, isn't it? The best thing happened, which Krishna calls it as that those Shujinam Shrimadam Gehe Yoga Brishtobi Jayate. So our future after leaving this body, we do not know where we will fall into. Where we will fall into. We can fall anywhere between the best birth, Shujinam Shrimadam Gehe Yoga Brishtobi Jayate, that we have fallen from our spiritual plane, but we have got another body and there is an opportunity to develop spiritually again, and maybe in one or two births you can completely escape from here. That possibility is there. That is the best birth. From there, then you can get different bodies, which country, in which family, in which culture you will take birth again, nobody knows, isn't it? Nobody knows about it. Oh, in that way, if you look at the scale, at the bottom end you can see you go to the hellish planets where you have to experience all the punishment for all our sinful deeds, what we have done. And then after the Naragalogam, again you are given another body and sent back again. So like this, it's a very wide open spectrum of things that can happen after death if we have not gone back to the spiritual world. We have not get ourselves released, isn't it? So here you can see how fear develops from this. When you analyze it all in detail, it is a great cause of fear inside us, isn't it? So, so moksham, Krishna is saying there, suppose in this life itself, if you manage to get released, which Krishna calls it as Jivan Mukti in the second chapter, that where he mentions there, that Brahmi Sthiti. Brahmi Sthiti, Krishna talks about that, isn't it? Second chapter, isn't it? Last verse, yes. So, that Krishna is saying that Brahmi Sthiti is this state becoming a single reality. That a totally liberated state. That is Brahmi Sthiti. That means you have realized it, there is no second thing here. There is no second thing here. So liberation can happen here in this life before death comes. So then the question comes, liberated from what? Liberated from samsaram, material existence, isn't it? So how did we get bound by this samsaram? How did we get bound by this samsaram? Why? How are we bound by this samsaram?
We are bound by this samsaram by karma. You see, karma means that is caused this bondage to this material existence. So why did we perform karma? Because we perform karma to fulfill all our desires. That's what happened. So desires came, attachment is the cause of the desire. Attachment to some things or vasanas. And then that desire is the cause of all the actions. And action is the cause of bondage or samsara material existence. So what made the desire to spring up inside in the first instance? And that is called mind. Now you see the mind, where it's coming from. So this entity called the mind through the senses, through their actions, get the experiences that fulfill its desires, and that is how we have got bound ourselves. How does it bound? For example, you can see that desires have been created. Where was it created? In the mind. In the mind. So now you can understand how material existence and bondage is so closely connected with mind. Is it not? Is it not? For everything has started from the mind. Material existence is due to karma. Karma caused the problem. Karma has come from the desires. Desires has come from the mind. So Krishna is saying here that in order to fulfill those desires, you can see mind, how the mind works. Look at this way. Mind, according to the desire, wants to work. According to its desire, vasanas inside. And that vasanas are, generally speaking, you can see it comes out in us in the form like this. For example, you want to watch a movie or things like that. Why? Mind wants it. Or gossiping, who wants it? Mind wants it. Snacking, who wants it? Mind wants it. You're not hungry, but you want to eat. Snack. They say snacking, isn't it? So snacking, gossiping, movie watching, all this is part of that mind, part of the mind. So strictly speaking, what does liberation mean? Liberation means freedom from the mind. Liberation means freedom from the mind. Now we have to come to this understanding first. That without freedom from the mind, this fearlessness situation will never happen. Will never happen. So, so when it is in relationship with the mind, when we are enjoying through snacking or gossiping or watching a movie or anything, whatever happiness that is coming is not what is called anandam. Anandam is called bliss. Bliss is the nature of Atma. Bliss is the nature of Atma. They are completely two different things. You should never link mind's happiness with the bliss of Atma. They are two different things, completely different. So if the mind vanishes, if the mind vanishes, disappears, we will not be aware of anything in this world. In other words, then then who is experiencing the bliss or moksha? Just like, it will be like in the deep sleep state. It will be like in the deep sleep state. Something like in the deep sleep state or in the unconscious state. Unconscious state. No, the important thing is, what happens at the deep sleep state? The person who is experiencing it also disappears. So practically you can say that in that state only experience exists, anandam exists. Only anandam exists. That is why you will see in the Brahma Sutram there is a sutram which is the third sutram, anandamayam abhyasad. Anandamayam is the nature. Athado brahma jityasa, then janmasdesya yadaha And then thirdly, anandamayo abhyasad. Anandamayam it is. That's all exist. Anandam only exist. The nature of Atma is anandam. Anandam is Atma. Atma is anandam. They are different. So in order to separate this out from the mind, this whole thing we have to reflect upon. That, and it has to be completely convinced inside that what I am experiencing through the mind has nothing to do with me. It's a separate thing that's happening. And what we all have to train in spiritual life is not allowing the happiness and distress of the mind to affect us, our blissful nature of the Atma. That is the purpose behind all these things, isn't it? So that bliss, Krishna is saying, is never changing. It cannot change. Brahmanandam or Atmanandam, in whichever way you call it, isn't it? So even in the mundane daily life, we experience something, we say, oh, it was like bliss, it was very blissful, we say. Sometimes we say like that, it was very blissful. But that expression is not, that's only spoken like that because it has given you so much happiness. That's why you say it was blissful. But actually it's not blissful, because bliss by very nature itself is, if you have blissful nature, it won't go away. It has to remain all the time. Whereas all other happiness in this world comes and goes. It doesn't stay. So Brahmanandam or Atmanandam, what Krishna says there, that is called is Anandam or bliss. And it is on this understanding that chapter in the Taittiriya Upanishad says Anandavali. Anandavali title given is based on this bliss or Anandam. So if you ask this question, suppose there is no mind to experience anything, how can we experience this Anandam? This question will come, is it not? Because normally everything we are experiencing through the mind. Everything. We are experiencing it through the mind. So mind can only perceive something, this is important, mind can only perceive something other than itself. Have you noticed that? You look into your own mind and ask the mind to analyze your own mind. It cannot do it. It cannot do it. Because it is very smart in understanding so many different things. That's actually very stupid. And when it comes to understanding itself, it cannot do it. Oh, the mind. I mean, you notice that, haven't you? That mind will talk about moon and the sun and the Mars and all other planets and about the MH370 which has disappeared and we don't know where it is. So mind is imagining about all that. But mind cannot imagine about the mind itself. This is the nature of the mind. So you can go and think about it and yourself, and you will understand this, what Upanishad is saying. This is the weakness part of the mind. Mind cannot understand itself. Mind can talk about rest of everything else in this world. From this you have to understand, this dvaidam or fear is nothing but a creation of the mind. You see? First of all, to understand this, I'm always experiencing another thing exists. Another thing exists. Dvaidam, dvaidam, dvaidam everywhere. Where is it coming from? It's coming from this mind. Why? Mind cannot understand itself, but it can understand everything else. So dvaidam and the mind are very closely connected. Very closely connected. So only to think about, understand, it can think about, understand and experience about all things that are external. But you think about so many things, write about them, understand them and experience them, all other things outside. But when you have to envision that, mind is the one that is doing all these things, isn't it? And but if you tell the mind, I want to stop you now for a minute and stop yourself, analyze yourself and understand yourself. If you tell the mind, you can't do it. You can't do it. Now, do you understand where dvaidam is coming from? Dvaidam's origin is in this mind. Mind is the one that is causing this problem. So, and this nature of the mind is that in 1 minute,
In one moment it looks very virtuous and good in nature, and the very next moment it can turn into corrupt, very corrupt also, isn't it? One moment it is very happy, and in the very next moment it is very miserable also. And at one instance it's somewhat peaceful, and in the next moment it can be very disturbed. Have you noticed this duality all the time in the mind? We all know that, don't you? If you look into your own mind sometimes, you can see this, experience yourself every day in life. Sometimes you feel okay, sometimes you feel really disturbed inside, really disturbed inside. And sometimes you feel some shanti, peace inside. Why is it all the time changing like this? Why this change is happening? Dvaitam. Dvaitam's effect it is. Because this mind, by creation itself, it's like that. Very nature of the mind. And you can see here, this is the same thing. And it is this mind, the one I'm thinking, it's me. My identification with the mind is so strong that I'm thinking all my experiences of the jiva, all his experiences, and when it goes to sleep, it becomes unconscious state, there is no experience, and you are still thinking it's all in the mind. We are all living like that, is it not? All the time in identification with the mind. In identification with the mind. So, because this identification with the mind is so strong, and from mind develops dvaitam, mind creates this dvaitam, and that dvaitam has to go from the mind, and in the waking state and the dream state, whatever we are experiencing at that time also is due to the presence of the mind. Is due to the presence of the mind. 100% in the dvaitam state, in the waking state. 100% in the dream state. Is it not? Deep sleep is a small thing only of life, isn't it? Most of the time is these two states, wakened and dream state. Deep sleep is a small state. So, Krishna is saying to us, you are not any of them. You are not this mind. You are not this mind. So, there is an I existing in the mindless state. When there is no mind, there is an I is existing. And and that I is experienced in the deep sleep or the unconscious state. That's when it is experienced. But the problem is, you are not aware of your existence then, in that deep sleep state. Your existence, you are not aware of that. But were you not really existing at that time? How is it that you woke up from that sleep? If you look at that, after waking up, how come you started performing all kinds of actions again? When you come back from that deep sleep state, isn't it? Even you are willing to compensate for the time you have lost during the sleep. Sometimes people say like that, that I have wasted my time sleeping, I am willing to compensate for that working for extra hours or something. So you can see here that yourself who existed before the sleep is still the same who has woken up after the sleep. And you have returned back to your consciousness at that time. So then what happens? At that time, all your relationships, everything comes back in this world. You started somebody, your friend, before you went to deep sleep. He was left in the deep sleep, but he has become again your close friend after the deep sleep, when you come back. Is it not? So, all the relationships and every other relationship what we had, not only on a friends or relatives, other relationship with the world, with the home, with the country where we live, then all other thoughts comes back again and establish that relationship backward. Who does that? The mind. Who does that? The mind does that. But you still have the same body, is it not? You still have the same body. Whether you are sleeping,
or whether you are unconscious or in the dream state, you are still alive. So, and even in that deep sleep state, the blood circulation and the body heat, as well as the breathing, digestion, all these things are going on even when your mind was not functioning. Is it not? In the deep sleep state. So you are still there. In other words, though we are able to recognize, consciously recognize ourselves as I, only when the mind is active, we do not exist even when the mind is not there. See the difficulty? That you are able to call yourself as I am this, I am that, only when this mind is present. But when you have gone into deep sleep state, you are not even able to identify yourself as I. Is it not? Because the mind is not there. So, look, this is where the difficulty is. How difficult liberation means that this thing called the mind, when Krishna is talking about throughout Bhagavad Gita, throughout Ekadasha Skandam, and all Sugha Brahmarshi talks about throughout Bhagavadam, freedom from the mind, freedom from the mind, freedom from the mind. You got to look into the depth into which mind is holding us tight. How deep that influence of the mind in us. That is why I'm saying all these things, because most of us do not take into account. We think, oh mind, what's the mind? We think like that. There is no other enemy inside us than this mind who is holding us like a hostage. Like a terrorist holding a hostage, it's holding us there. In the vacant state, in the dream state, and even in the deep sleep, we are not allowed to come to our identification with I, who we real I, what we are. Krishna is saying to us that you are none of this. Mind is not us, body is not us, but then who are we? That question is coming. So the true I, you are not able to know even in the deep sleep state, even in the deep sleep state. So, all the thoughts and feelings are based on this mind. And when you are absent, when these thoughts and feelings are absent, what is the situation then? Practically, we become jadam, dead matter, is it not? That is the deep sleep state. It turns the jiva to jadam. That's how Upanishad says. In the vacant state and in the dream state, the mind is present. So we feel we have life and we identify with the mind. But as soon as you go into deep sleep, what happens? The mind disappears, but then we are not identifying with our real I. Instead, we identify as jadam, dead matter. That's what we say about ourselves, isn't it? I slept like a log. We say like that. In deep sleep state, that's how we say. I slept like a log. What does that mean? Log means dead wood, is it not? So, dead matter. That is, in Shastram, they call the word, uses the word jadam. Jadam is the word. And that jadam state, that is the state where the real I is possible to retrieve from there. So this is what makes us think, this is the reason what makes us think that the mind is our I. We start thinking the mind is our I. However, in the absence of the mind, there is something else that is, you can see, in the absence of the mind, there is something that is keeping us alive. Is it not? Is it not? Which is controlling our breathing, controlling our respiration, and the digestion, and blood circulation, and so many things. So, even though I call the mind as I, that mind's jurisdiction finishes with the dream state. And there is some another I inside me which is controlling this body and keeping me alive even in that deep sleep state, which is the true I. Which is the true I. And it may be jadam, doesn't matter. I slept like a log, like a dead matter, but I was kept alive by that I, by that the true I, the real I, isn't it? So, that is the proof that something else that is indeed our real I and not this mind. how difficult it is to come out of this mind, which we are identifying all the time. All our activities, dealings with this world is based on this mind. It's from the mind everything comes, and it goes into the mind and interacts with the world. All these things, vasanas, what we spoke about, including fear, where is it? In the mind. So if you understand this mind properly, and if you give enough time to reflect on this, you will slowly get release from the influence of this mind. That is the principle. Krishna is going to talk about it here. You will see, lot of things are spoken in the Bhagavad Gita. Only a few verses Krishna has covered all that. But we are supposed to understand it in this way. Otherwise you won't see it will become simply like a commandment. And we don't want Bhagavad Gita to be a commandment, because then it makes no sense. Bhagavad Gita is a science altogether. So what Krishna is saying here is that this thing, this real I, because this real I, why is it called real I? It exists even when the mind doesn't exist. Because in the deep sleep, there is no mind, but he exists. And without it, also the other thing is, if that true I goes away, the mind cannot exist. The mind doesn't exist after that, isn't it? So, when life leaves the body becomes devoid of feelings. All feelings goes away, does it not? So, similarly, just like you can see a dead body, it doesn't have a mind. Does it have a mind? No, it is already gone, isn't it? So, when the life principle that leaves this body, though it doesn't exist in that particular body, when the mind leaves this body, dead matter, dead body doesn't have a mind there. Mind is gone, because dead body doesn't think, act or anything like that. Mind is left. Similarly, Krishna is saying to us that I, true I, which was in the deep sleep state, does that cease to exist after the death? No. Krishna is saying it has to exist. It really cannot die after the death. Just like the same way, the mind does not die after death. And it leaves and goes and accepts another body along with the body. It doesn't die. Similarly, when the jiva takes another birth to reap the fruits of its karma, this life principle starts it work again in the new life form. That means when the mind goes with the subtle body, in other words, mind is a subtle body, when it loses this body, and when it goes to its next body and starts its work there, which we accept, what Krishna is saying, that you have to leave this body, accept another body. If you accept that, if you don't accept it, then there's no problem. Everything is finished here itself. Some people are like that, isn't it? But because we accept Bhagavad Gita's authority, and Bhagavad Gita is saying to us, that this is what will happen. Dehinosmin yadha dehe kaumaram yuvanam jara tadha dehandara prapti. Dehandara prapti. Similarly, after leaving this body, there is another body. Krishna is saying, the mind is the one which will carry into the next body. So, just like while living in this body, in the vacant state and in the dream state, I am identifying with my mind. When it gets to deep sleep state, mind is not there, but still this body is functioning due to the presence of that true I, which actually run the blood circulation, the breathing, and the all other functions in the body, and keeping this body alive. And it is from that true I, this power of mind has also come. Mind also received its power from that I. This is Shastra. This is how we have to understand that. This is Shastram. You cannot get this by experiment. How will you experiment and find this out? Impossible. The only way, you have to accept the authority of the Vedam authority of the rishis, authority of the sages, and go through the process and realize it and find it is true or not. There is nothing you can do about it. They will give you all logic possible. That very logical it is it not? When Krishna says this, Krishna is saying to us that step by step, if you look, you will see fear, material existence. And Krishna explained to us what that fear means. Fear means mahado bhayal, about a life after death. What will happen? That's our greatest fear. What will happen after death? Krishna never discussed about all the fear of this world. This fear, what's point in discussing? He mentioned in simple terms, janmam, mrityu, jara, three things. But that already decided, Krishna says, don't waste too much time on it. It will happen in its own way. Whatever has to happen will happen. But janmam, mrityu, jara, vyadhi. But after death, what will happen? Intelligent person should think about it. That is the greatest fear in everyone's mind. It should be. That's what Krishna is saying. And that fear can vary from in a scale from the best body or say yoga brashta right up to the lowest body where you have to go and suffer in the hellish planets. Anywhere in between. What all we'll have to face there is unknown to us. That account is separate. We don't know anything about it. So having said that, Krishna is saying to us that this fear, what we are experiencing now, is coming from dvaitam. That's the first thing Krishna said. That wherever you have existence of a second object, a second thing existing, like Kavi Maharshi said, bhayam didiyal abhinivesha tasyal ishad abedasya viparyayo smriti. From that second thing, fear will come. So first thing is, the second thing must disappear. There should not be another second thing existing. And in reality, there is no second thing. That is in a very high realized state, like Sukadeva Goswami. When we talk about it, he says, tam sarvabodha hridayam muni manatosmi, isn't it? In presence in all, he is present in everywhere. So therefore, Sukadeva Goswami has no fear of anything. He is present everywhere. Who should be fear about? Only if there is a second thing, you have to be fearful about. But there is no second thing and there is no fear either. So that is the solution to this problem of fearlessness to come. But that won't happen easily. Why? Because Krishna is saying there that this fear is generated within from the thing called mind. From the thing called mind. So mind has to first disappear from inside. Once the mind has disappeared, what will happen? There's only one thing existing. Only what exists is the bliss of Atma. Atma's pure consciousness, pure bliss. Nothing else exists then. So before going to that, Krishna is saying in this chapter, that giving us through this example, that in the waking state and in the dream state, we are experiencing this thing called mind. When you go into the deep sleep, mind doesn't exist, but you are still existing because your body is maintained by somebody. In the form of respiration, blood circulation, digestion, various things, this body is taken care of in the deep sleep state. Somebody is taking care of, and Krishna says that is the true I. And when you come back into the dream state or to the waking state later, all that what you have left in your previous day, it's all coming back. And that is why, if you remember, in the Bhagavatam, four kinds of devastation is spoken. Nityam, Naimityam, Pragratam, Atyantikam. So daily going back to sleep, deep sleep, is called Nitya Pralayam. Daily devastation it is called. Nitya Pralayam, every day. It's a devastation that's happening there. What's happening? You are losing your body, mind, intelligence, ego, everything, and you go into the deep sleep state. Therefore, it's called devastation. You are losing everything, aren't you? And the next day, you are coming back. And this happens every single day. Therefore, it's called Nitya Pralayam. You will see in the 12th canto in the Bhagavatam, Sudha Goswami and this Rishi is talking about it. They are asking the question, what are these four kinds of devastation? Pralayam. So, Nitya Pralayam is this. That every day going to deep sleep and losing everything. But when you come back next day, everything comes back to us. Is it not? So Krishna is saying to us that this true I, which was there in the deep sleep state, he is present in the waking state as well as in the dream state. And that is, it is only due to the presence of that true I that this mind is working. Otherwise mind cannot work. And when the mind leaves this body, Because it is established in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna is saying to us, mind is the one which carries us from one body to another. Is it not? That like a flower aroma carries, aroma of a flower carries, the wind carries the aroma of a flower to another place. Similarly, the mind carries all our vasanas are carried with it, along with it to the next body when the body is decided. Whatever body that is going to be in the next life, it goes there. So Krishna is saying to us that if the mind is leaving this body and going to another body, this true I, which was in the deep sleep state, must go with that mind to the next body. This is the logic. True I cannot stay here once the mind has gone there. It will not. If the true I is there, the body cannot be dead. That it is not dead body. If it is a dead body, these two things have already left. The mind has left, as well as the true I has left. And then the next life starts. And from there, the next life starts. So it's 5 o'clock, we'll have a break. Chedo darpanam arjanam vomahadava agni nirvavanam shreya kaidava chandriga vidaranam vidyavadhu jivanam ആനന്ദാംബുദി വർദ്ധനം പ്രതിപദ പൂർണാമൃതാസ്വാദനം സർവാപ്താ സുവനം വരം വിജയദേ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ സങ്കീർത്തനം നാംനാമകാരി ബഹുദാ നിജ സർവശക്തി തത്രാർപ്പിതാ നിയമിതാ സ്മരണേന കാലാ ഏദാദൃശി തവ കൃപാ ഭഗവൻ മമാവി ദുർദൈവമീദൃശമിഹാ ജനിനാനുരാഗാ തൃണാലവിഷുനീചേന തരോറവി സഹിഷ്ണുന അമാനിനാമാനദേന കീർത്തനീയ സദാഹരി നഥനം നജനം നസുന്ദരീം കവിതാം വ ജഗദീശകാമയേ മമ ജന്മനി ജന്മനീശ്വരി ഭവദാത് ഭക്തിരഹൈ ദുഹിത്വൈ ഐ നന്ദതനൂജകിങ്കരം പതിതാം മാം ക്ഷമേ ഭവാം ബുധൗ കൃപയാ തവ പാദപങ്കജ സ്ഥിതധൂളീസദൃശം വിചിന്തയാം നയനം ഗലദശ്രുധാരയാ വദനം ഗദ്ഗദരുദ്ധയാ ഗിര പുളകേർനിചിതം കഥാവഭൂതവന്നാമഗ്രഹണേ ഭവിഷ്യതി യുദ്ധായുധം നിമേഷേണ ചക്ഷുഷാ പ്രാവിശായുധം ശൂന്യായുധം ജഗൽ സർവം ഗോവിന്ദ വിരഹേണമേ ആശ്ലിഷ്യ വാ പാദരതാം പിനഷ്ടുമാം അദർശനാം മർമഹതാം കരോതു വാ യഥാ തഥാ വാ വിദദാ ദുലംബനോ മത് പ്രാണനാഥാസ്തു നൈവ നാപരാ. So important thing is that the mind doesn't die with the body. It goes into the next body. When the mind, because the mind also goes to the next body, we have to understand that Atma, the true I, which was in the deep sleep, maintaining this body in form of, or even though appears like a dead body, in the deep sleep, it's like a dead body, isn't it? Like we say, like a log of wood, I slept like a log of wood, I say. So it appears like a dead body, but it kept it alive. It kept the body alive through the blood circulation, the breathing, and all other functions in the body. Mind was not present there. Who did that? That is the true I. So that true I is the one which gives the power for the mind as well. That is why if the mind has to leave this body and if it has to go to another body, the true I has to go along with it, because if the true I doesn't go, that the mind doesn't have any power to function anymore in the next body. See the logic? If we leave this body, if the mind leaves this body, mind goes into another body. This mind was functioning here because the presence of the true I. So when it goes into the next body, and if it has to function there, because mind is the repository of karma, vasana, and this transmigration of the soul. Krishna explains that in the second chapter, isn't it? Atma itself is not the transmigrator, really. Atma is present everywhere all the time. But it is the mind that is moving from one body to another. So if the mind has to function, Atma is required. Without Atma's presence, mind cannot function. So if the mind is transmigrating from one body to another, one planet to another, one species to another, wherever mind goes, Atma must follow with that, because otherwise mind cannot function. This is the logic in that. So with the framework of another body. So even during the sleep or unconsciousness, when the mind is inactive, the life still exists, is it not? Does exist. But the mind is unable to act in a lifeless body, Then the body decomposition happens in the body, it gets destroyed and becomes useless. In other words, only with the support of the mind and the body, it can live. Body can live not independently. It cannot live independently. The mind and the world, along with the and the world goes along to a new body only when life enters another body after the destruction of this first body. That means when the mind and the world, along with that mind, when we say world, what it means is this vasana. Vasana is the world of the mind, is it not? Material samsaram, in other words, material existence is vasana. That is what chittavritti is, what is developed in the form of vasanas and get established there. After destruction of the first body, it goes into the next body. And these things are, from the mind comes the gross body. Remember, we discussed before that. So from the mind comes the gross body. So when the mind moves on to the next body, it decided already what the next gross body will be like. What it's going to be like, isn't it? So, and there, mind can create the gross body, but in order for the mind to survive, the true I, which was in the deep sleep state, is required. Otherwise, mind cannot function. So, if the mind has to generate another material body, you require the help of the Atma inside, because mind cannot function without the power of Atma. So, now comes the next step. How do you become awareness of life independent of the mind? That's the next thing. How to become awareness of life independent of the mind? So, moksham or liberation, what Krishna is talking about is experiencing this life's existence with no association with the mind. That is moksha. Experiencing this life's existence without association with the mind. That means the thoughts that's arising in the mind or the bondage of karma that occurs as a result of these thoughts. Bondage is through the thoughts, you have to know that. That we do a karmam. Karmam creates vasana. Vasana binds us. And from that vasana, fresh karmam may or may not happen. But once you have vasana, you are bound. You don't have to perform the karmam. Karmam creates vasana. But from vasana, bondage happens. But vasana is an in-between thing. That means it has created the mind. It has given strength to the mind, life to the mind. So, when we use this word jiva for a living entity, it does not mean a lifeless thing. That's not a jiva. Jiva is a life thing. And it is true that sometimes we say that you are living like a dead body, you are sleeping like a dead body, dead wood, we say. So during the states of sleep or unconsciousness, not associated with the mind, that is called a jadam. Jadam means that. But generally people will use this with this understanding that dead wood. But actually jadam is not that state. That's why Bharata Yogeshwara was called Jada Bharata. It's not jadam. It is that state where there is no mind is not functioning. Mind is not functioning. That is that state called jadam. Do you understand the difference? Huh? That jadam is not dead wood. Generally people use it like that. Dead wood has no consciousness. But Jadabharata has consciousness, but he has no mind. Therefore he is called Jadabharata. There is no mind working anymore inside him. So, when you are in that Jada state, mind was in that state. Mind was there, but it was in a jadam state. That means there's no life in the mind. So then, so that existence, you are not associated with the mind. Now in our present state, we are very closely connected with the mind, isn't it? Mind is everything for us at the moment. You're listening now with the mind. You're analyzing things through the mind. You're making decisions through the mind. And when other thoughts are coming to your mind now, about home, about work, about food, or about sleep, or whatever other rest of the things in this world, it's all happening in the mind. Nowhere else. So mind is where your identification is at the moment very strongly. So, but when you are disconnected from the life, when the mind is disconnected, that means this energy that's been given to the mind to do all these things which is coming from Atma, the soul, is the power of life is simply absent in the mind. And so only when the Atma withdraws that power from the mind becomes jadam. Mind becomes jadam. That's the Bharata Maharaj's case. Bharata was living. He was living in the true I, not in the mind. We are living in the mind, not in the true I. This is the difficulty. This is why 10th canto is called Mano Nirodham. You will notice this. Atra sargo visargascha sthanam poshanam udaya manyundaram ishani katho nirodham. What is nirodham? Nirodham of the mind. Which one? Dashamaskandam, 10th canto. Nirodho muktirashraya. So you can see the whole 10th canto is focusing on the mind. How to break this connection with the mind. Break the connection with the mind. And personalities discussed in the Bhagavadam are those who are broken from the mind. Once you are broken from the mind, you will be like one of them. Like Jadabharata, or like Dattatreya, or like Rishabhadev, or like Shugabrahmarshi, and many others like that. Even gopis, they were broken from the mind. They mentions that in the Gopiya Gita, you will see, they're talking about that. Mind is gone. There's no mind anymore functioning within. What it means is, this energy that is supplied to the mind by Atma has put to a break. No more power given to the mind to operate by Atma. That's what that break means. We are frightened, isn't it? Oh, mind is gone. What will happen? What happens is this, that mind is not given any more energy by Atma to function. So it cannot function anymore. It's a dead state, isn't it? So, when the mind is withdrawn, like in the deep sleep state, life is still existed, is it not? So that is proving to us that it is possible to be alive without mind. Who is proving that? Deep sleep state. Deep sleep state is proving to us that it is possible to live without a mind. In the deep sleep you existed, isn't it? Life is still possible. So, and life with its power. So that is why that even in the absence of the mind, the vital organs like breathing, blood circulation, digestion, everything is working even in the absence of the mind. Can you not see that in the deep sleep state? So because it's working in the deep sleep state in the absence of the mind, it is possible to exist in the absence of the mind, even in the vacant state. Even in the vacant state. But it will be a different kind of existence, not like in the conditioned way, where we are now. Conditioned state, we are existing in one way, and we think this is the right situation. Therefore, rishis are telling us that you are in trouble, actually. You have to come out of this present state, where you are in the control of the mind. So, why then the only the mind we are experiencing now, and that is called Maya. When you are experiencing anything in this world under the influence of the mind, it is called Maya. It is called Maya. So now you know how powerful Maya is. Maya means three modes of material nature, and which is present in the mind, and that's through which we are seeing everything. So all our vision is very colored. Everything what we see is colored vision. And Dvaitam is also another vision like that. Dvaitam is also another vision like that.
That is why we are unable to perceive the lie, what life would lie. Because of this only, we are unable to perceive this. What will happen? What will happen to us
once the mind is gone? After the cessation of the mind, what will it be like? We are unable to perceive that because of the presence of Maya. Because of the presence of Maya. People always ask that question, or we try to imagine, what will it be like if there is no mind? We imagine that, isn't it? When you read Bhagavatam, and when you see all these personalities like Dattatreya and Rishabhadev and Shukabrahmarshi and many others, even Prahlada, and all of them, they had no mind. And we are trying to understand that with this mind. And then we are not able to do that. That is the reason for that is, what life would be like, cessation of the mind, because only that falls within the perception of our, or the realm of the mind, is considered as ours. That's how we are conditioned. Is it not? Only whatever that is coming in the capacity of the mind, whatever we perceive, we consider it as ours. I got it. Why? Because I am the mind. It is in the mind I am living. My existence is in the mind. Sometimes if the body is paining, then even then, without the mind, I can't experience that pain of the body. So you can see these two things, body and the mind, they are our permanent problems, body and the mind. But this body will go one day and that's finished. But the other one, it will linger on to the next one and create another one to enjoy or suffer in that existence. So that is why these things are, if it is thinks through all these things in a deeper level, you can understand that what Krishna is saying to us. We'll come to that little bit more things. So after saying that, Krishna is saying there that we are frightened that when you lose your mind, or when mind is not working, you are unable to visualize or unable to comprehend that state, what it will be like. And when you read the book, you will see Jadabharata was wandering around like a mad person, and then we say, oh, I don't want to be like that. I like to have my mind. I don't want to be like Jadabharata, wandering around all over without proper food, without proper clothing, and then somebody comes and pulls you out, carry this palanquin, and he tells you that to do that. So you start thinking, oh, I don't think it's a very interesting proposal. You start thinking like that. Or when you read about Rishabhadev, after he left the palace, before he left his body, how was he wandering around? He had put a stone in his mouth. And completely naked, he was wandering around in this world. And people were spitting at him, passing urine on him, throwing stones at him. Children were throwing stones, thinking that he is a mad person. And him, if you read about him, what was his state of consciousness? There was no mind in him. They say it very clearly. And Yudhishthira Maharaj, when he left this, if you read how he left his palace and walked out, that's how he left, in a fully realized state. Mahaprasthanam, if you read 19th, 18th chapter in the first canto, you will see when he was leaving, he was not conscious of everything. There was no mind in him. Mind is, that is called liberation. That is called a liberation. That state, when the mind is completely gone from inside. That means mind does not, when we say mind is gone, means there's no more energy given by the Atma to the mind. Therefore, mind cannot function anymore. There's no functioning of the mind. Same thing with Dattatreya. When he was lying down fully naked in the riverbank, Kaveri riverbank, Prahlada meets him there, isn't it? And similarly, Yadu goes and meets him later, King Yadu. And they have that conversation between, that is where these 24 spiritual masters, everything came. He is lying there fully naked, and Yadu is asking this question, how come you are so fat that nobody is giving you any food, and you don't seem to be bothered about anything in this world? All this is to indicate to us that thing called mind is gone in him. When the mind is gone, then whatever happens to the body, he is not bothered. So there is no prarabdham there anymore to go through that. The body will finish up and go. It has a destined certain period of time and then it will go after that. So all the realized souls, this is how it ends up at finally, if realization has happened to them. If it has not happened, if we leave the body, we will leave the body in distress, crying and frightened and fearful and looking at all our friends and relatives and all that. But Bhagavatam is presenting to us that even Parikshit Maharaj, when he left the body, you can see, what did he say? Abhayam, he said. Is it not? If you remember that Siddhosmi and Agrihidosmi, if you read there, Abhayav Tatudarshina, he says, about the Shukha Brahmarshi gave that state of fearless existence of fearfulness, freedom from the existence of fearful existence. So more and more, if you start looking into these personalities, you will observe this one important thing. What's that? Their mind has completely switched off, fully switched off. That's what Krishna is saying here, that it may appear to us in the form of jadam, but when we close our eyes, does the world really cease to exist? Similarly, when the clock stops, we are unable to know the time. But does it really mean that the time has come to a standstill? You see that logic there. That when we close our eyes, does the world really cease to exist? World is still there, but I have closed my eyes. Isn't it? But just because I close my eyes, I can't say the world is not existing. Similarly, that suppose my watch has stopped, the clock has stopped, doesn't mean the time has stopped. Time is still going on in this world. So, it is on the same principle Krishna is saying here, that life principle that is disconnected from the mind also has an ability to feel. That means the real true I, when that is disconnected from the mind, it has also got an ability to feel. And this feeling is the true feeling. Real permanent consciousness. That's what it is. Permanent consciousness. And that is what we say supreme consciousness. Krishna consciousness, in other words. Supreme consciousness or Krishna consciousness is the consciousness or the feeling of that true I inside. Of the true I inside. That is why they say Chaitanyam, living force. Isn't it? Chaitanyam, it is addresses Chaitanyam, Alma and Jnanam. Or actually, they are all one and the same thing. And to say that it has got knowledge or Jnanam is technically not correct. Is technically not correct. Because it is knowledge. It is not saying, the saying Alma has got knowledge, that is wrong. Alma is knowledge. Remember that. Alma is knowledge, not that Alma has got knowledge. That is technically wrong. Why? That's why Krishna is saying, in the Bhagavatam also you will see, Vadandhiti Tattvavidam Tattvam Yat Jnanam Advaya Jnanam is that Tattvam, it says. It doesn't say Alma is the Tattvam. It says Jnanam is the Tattvam. Its identity is Jnanam. Its Jnanam is the Tattvam. That's why sometimes they say that in some spiritual books you will see, if you read there, you will see that whatever you experience through the mind, they call it consciousness with small c. And whatever you experience with Alma, it is referred to as capital C. For this reason, to separate that, the two different things from that. So strictly speaking, Krishna is saying that the whatever your experience is in the absence of the mind is your real experience, real I, is that, because that's the real one. The all other experiences are in reference to the mind, and that experience is not taken it as an experience even. It is not, it is a perception only. It is a perception only. Why? You can see this. that things what you have imagined in your mind, based on that you have some experience, based on your imagination. For example, certain things what you have, you had some experience in this world. That experience, in your mind, you have analyzed it about that experience. And due to that, you have suffered or enjoyed. Something happened inside you. What does that indicate? Indicating to us that experience is mainly due to the presence of the mind. Mainly due to the presence of the mind. Suppose somebody has spoken something bad about you to someone else. And you heard this through somebody, that somebody is telling like this about me. And then your mind starts working. Why did he say like that? What did he say? You want to know. And the mind will start building up certain, based on the rumor, something has been spoken, that mind will interpret it in many different ways and give you misery from that, or happiness from that, whichever way it is good. So, but whereas the experience of Atma, the real I, true I, does not do that. The mind does all these kind of things. It can interpret things in different ways. So, so what Shastram saying to us is that there is a state in which that we can live in this world in spite of the mind being the absent. In the absence of the mind also, you can live in this world. That this life principle is our real I. And if that real I doesn't exist, in the deep sleep state, you cannot live. You won't be living in the... You will become non-existent in the deep sleep state if the real I was not there. So that's another proof of the existence of the true I. So this separation from the true I, from the false I, is necessary all the time. All the time. It's necessary to separate these two, false I and the true I. Because it is the false I that's creating all the troubles in this life. And the more we separate from the false I and go into the true I, and that's done through Shraddha. Shraddha is required there. Shraddha's help is necessary to do this. Without Shraddha, it won't happen. The separation from the false I to the true I. So we can see here this knowledge of Atma that exists, or pure knowledge, or Jnanam, what Krishna says that, and associated with that knowledge is the bliss. Is it not? And that is hidden from the mind. That's hidden from the mind. In other words, mind is that curtain, which is the curtain which has been drawn by Maya. Maya has put this curtain called mind to separate us from that true I with its true experience. So the true I and the true experience, Krishna, Maya has put this curtain called mind and put us into a false experience to experience the false I and a false life based on that. That's what this is. So, so if we dedicate ourselves, now, this is where Krishna is going to start this chapter. If you dedicate yourself for austerities and penances, cultivation of knowledge, and also the food, what we control, eat, and the karmam, what we engaged in, which if it is, turns out to be yajnam, all these things are factors which will improve the Shraddha to separate ourselves from the false I to the true I. False I to the true I. And when you do that, Krishna is saying, the mind will simply melt and dissolve away. So, Atma, our true form, will begin to glow. So, unlike
during the sleeping time or unconscious state, which we cannot experience anything. During deep sleep or unconscious state, we cannot experience anything because we are not aware of that. Only experience is there, but we are not there, isn't it? We are not there due to the absence of the mind. But if the mind is there, you will experience that. When the mind dissolves away, we can actually recognize ourselves to be consciousness. So today we are identifying with the mind and experiencing thing. In the liberated state, Krishna is saying, you will identify with consciousness and experience things. You won't identify with the mind and experience things. Rather, you will identify with the consciousness and experience it as the... There, that point, these two things won't be existing. That I and the consciousness. There's only consciousness. There's only consciousness. And that is about, and to be in the self-realized state or blissful state. And therefore they say, we are the bliss. Not that I'm experiencing bliss. We are the bliss. We are the bliss. We are the bliss. The bliss is a very nice word, isn't it? Somehow it gives you a nice feeling when you say this word, bliss. So the other day I saw there was one devotee traveling in India, somewhere in Nepal area. So he found something interesting. He says there was one hotel written, Hotel Bliss. So he says that the people here around, he says, they take this word bliss in a very happy way. They seem to enjoy using that word bliss, he says. Whereas he's an American devotee, he says, in America they won't use that word bliss for a hotel. Because they know bliss is something beyond this world, isn't it? But in India they say they are using this word bliss. But then in the next, another hotel he saw, Hotel Krishna. Krishna Vilas or something like that, he says. So it's okay that they are using Krishna's word also and they are using bliss also there. In other words, so when we identify, no, this is the important thing. When we currently identifying as ourself, namely the mind, is actually incapable of knowing the self. Currently, I am identifying with the mind, and the mind is incapable of knowing itself. I am identifying with that mind, and the mind is incapable of knowing itself, and only capable of knowing things that are other than itself. That we have established before. We have said that, isn't it? Currently, we are identifying with the self, which is the mind. I'm thinking I'm the mind. And the mind is actually incapable of knowing itself, and only capable of knowing things that are other than itself. But when we exist as Atma or consciousness in our true form, we know only ourselves and don't know any other entity. That is it. Remember, when we realize self, it won't be like the way we are with the mind. With mind is not capable of knowing itself. It is only capable of knowing other things. And we are identifying with the mind. That is why we are in trouble. We are not able to realize the self. But instead of identifying with the mind, if we identify with the consciousness or bliss or anandam, if that happens, which is our true form, we know only ourselves and don't know any other entity. And that is what that Tam Sarvabhuta Hridayam Munim Anathosmi means. That you only know about, it's all a question of experience, isn't it? What you are experiencing. Today I am experiencing, because of my identification with the mind, I am experiencing different persons, the world and the other thing, happiness and distress, all dvandvam I am experiencing. Why? Because I am identified with the mind and mind is experiencing all these things. What Krishna is training us now is, if you lose this identification with the mind itself,
And if you are identifying purely with the consciousness, what will happen is, you can only experience yourself, nothing else. That means it will not be similar to the experience through the mind, rather it will be, you will know only yourself, nothing else exists then. Nothing else is existing, and don't know any other entity after that. That is that state of the jnani, realized soul. Realized soul. That you cannot anymore imagine. So it's a question of changing this realization, isn't it? That what Krishna is saying to us is that when he is saying to us about the true I, pure consciousness, what will happen? Because this question will always come. People will ask, oh, what will happen to me if I don't have the mind? That is why when we talk about Jadabharata, when we talk about Rishabhadev, when we talk about Dattatreya, when we talk about Shukabrahmarshi, when we talk about Prahlada and many others, you can see that for them a second thing didn't exist. A second thing didn't exist for them. Why? In consciousness, if you are identifying with, there cannot be a second thing. In mind, if you are identifying with, there will be many second things. That's a big problem, big difference. If you are identifying with the mind, there will be a lot of second things, second persons, second world. So many second things, second, everything is second. That is what Kavi is saying there. Bhayam dvidiyal abhinivesha tasyal ishad apedasya viparyayo smriti. See that? And if you have a second thing, there will be fear. Fear will never go. So only when our identification with the mind goes away and completely moves into consciousness, bhayam will go. And that is the state of abhayam, freedom from bhayam. And then there is no death anymore. There is no old age anymore. And there is no more other distress in this world. Nothing, everything has gone along with that. So that is the important thing. And so this shifting from mind, identification with the mind, to identification with the consciousness, that's where Shraddha comes in. That's where Shraddha comes in. That is what Krishna is saying here also. That when this consciousness as identification has started, then you won't know any other entities in this world. You won't start seeing another person separately from you. That is why jnanis are never disturbed about anything. When they see another person, they are seeing, it is me who is present in that person. Then how can I have any ragadvesham towards him? Remember that? That ragadvesham is due to, I am seeing you separately from me. If I am seeing me, because I am in the consciousness rather than in the mind, and it is the same consciousness I know is present in you, who is not different from me, where is the question of ragadvesham? Ragadvesham has gone. Similarly, when I am identifying with my limited body, and with my false ego, and with my mind, ahangaram of kartrutvam and bhoktrutvam, I am the doer and I am the enjoyer is there. But when I have identified with consciousness, who is present in everyone as one entity, where is the question of kartrutvam and bhoktrutvam? Kartrutva bhoktrutvam is like this, that I have done better than you. I have to prove that to the world, isn't it? And that's why I have done better. I am better than you. I have done better than you. And I want the result, and therefore, bhoktrutvam. I want the result to myself, because I am limiting to my mind and my body. Therefore, I want the result to me, for me. Because falsely I am identifying with the mind and the body. But if I know that I am the same consciousness who is present in everyone as consciousness, then I am not too bothered whether that me in the form of mind doesn't exist anymore. What exists is only one consciousness present in everyone. Therefore, kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam also disappears. You see, what all changes happens in that state of realization. Kartrutvam, bhoktrutvam goes away. Ragadvesham also goes away. And similarly, Krishna is saying, with that mind also disappears, all these things goes away. And but in order to shift us from this identification with the mind to the identification with consciousness, that's where Shraddha comes in. That's where Shraddha comes in. So,
So this experience of not knowing anything, because when you come to consciousness, at that time you are not thinking of others separately from you, is it not? Bodily identity has completely gone by then. There's no bodily identity anymore. It's purely in the consciousness state. And that time, that experience is not similar to the way when you shut your eyes and the world is disappearing. It's not similar to that, isn't it? Because here, the jiva's mind and the arena where it is acting, that which is the jagat, all of that has become an illusion. Or it has become an illusion. And you know that there is nothing but Maya that has created it. Maya has taken out that veil or taken out that curtain away. And then you realize it that this jagat, this world, and the jiva, which was busy with kartrutvam, both doer and enjoyer, and attachment and aversion, ragadvesham, all these things all together totally disappear. And then you realize it that Maya has lifted that veil, and therefore you are seeing things in the proper way. That is why, you know, when we talked about the pure devotee state in the Bhagavatam, what was that? What did they say in the pure devotee? Pure devotee is consciousness. There's three types of devotees, isn't it? First, sarva bhudeshu yappashyet bhagavad bhava malpana bhudani bhagavatyesha savai bhagavadottama. The first one. So, a first-class devotee or a self-realized jnani, they are all in the same state. And what is that state? They don't live in the mind. They live in the consciousness. They live in the consciousness. Sarva bhudeshu yappashyet bhagavad bhavam almana. That is what this is. This is bhagavad bhavam. What is that? Seeing consciousness in everything. Everywhere, consciousness, not the body. Sarvabhudeshu yappashyet bhagavad bhavam almana. It's not that I look at everyone and everybody I see there everybody looks like Krishna to me. Now, if I look at them, now I'm seeing man, woman, everything. But now, after self-realization, that's not what that verse is saying. That I'll see everywhere Krishna standing there with the flute in the hand and a peacock feather and yellow garment, all the, you won't see anything. But what you will see there is this state. This is that state what Krishna is talking about. Who is saying that in the Bhagavatam? Hari Maharshi says there, isn't it? Sarvabhudeshu yappashyet bhagavad bhavam almana bhudani bhagavatyesha savai bhagavadottama. Explanation to that. Bhudani bhagavati esha savai bhagavadottama. Sarvabhudeshu yappashyet bhagavad bhavam almana. He is seeing in everywhere his presence, and his presence of all of them in him, both ways. That means there is no separation between him and others. That separation is broken. That's what it is. Sarva bhudeshu yappashyet bhagavad bhavam bhudani bhagavatyesha savai bhagavadottama. Him presents in everyone, everyone present in him. There is no separate me and you. That is broken in him. That is the state of pure devotee. That's the state of pure devotee, first class devotee. Of course, that's a very higher state, but that's impossible to ordinary persons to imagine that. It is personalities like Prahlada, Rishabhadev, or Dattatreya, or Shukabrahmarshi, Jatabharata. These are the persons in that category. You can see, or gopis, for example. Vritrasura, another one. Who became, this is what was his state when he left, isn't it? That's why he told, Vritrasura says to Indra, bring your thunderbolt and cut my stomach. Can you imagine a war when somebody is telling you what to do to the enemy? But when you read all that, you'll start thinking, what kind of war is this going on? He is saying to them, Vritrasura's enemy was Indra, is it not? And Indra tried all his ways to kill Vritrasura. He couldn't kill him. And he failed in everything, even when he threw with the Vajrayudham, that Vajram, the thunderbolt, what he was using against Vritrasura, it didn't work initially. Then Vritrasura is telling to Indra, Indra, it won't work. What you have to do now is bring that and cut my stomach. Go inside. Vritrasura became so big and swallowed Indra inside. And Indra didn't know what to do. And Indra is inside Vritrasura's belly. He is there.
Then Vritrasura is telling Indra, you cut open and come out from inside, he says to him. And it's a war, supposed to be a fighting happening there. So what does that indicate? Vritrasura has reached that state, he could not think Indra is an enemy anymore. Where is enemy and where is friend? He says to Indra, friend and enemy is all when you are in the field of mind. In the field of mind, all those things existing. So that is why Maya from within is Atma alone. So Atma is the important factor, the true I, what is present inside. And when Maya removes that curtain from the friend side, then we will see things. That is the proper vision, what they talk about. Vision, proper vision is then. What we are seeing now is through the senses and through the mind. And we are saying, oh, everything is true. What I have seen it, it's the truth, we say. And when we are under the grip of this mind and under the grip of these senses, if we declare truth, truth, truth about anything, it is not the truth. And therefore, all the jnanis, realized personalities, will say to us that under the influence of the mind and the senses, whatever they talk is all nonsense. Whatever we talk is all nonsense. Under the influence of the mind and the senses, because it's not coming from the real source, it's coming from the false place, from the mind and the senses. And therefore, truth is never realized under the influence of the mind and the senses. It's not possible to realize the truth. Till you get released from the grip of the mind and the senses, it will not happen. That is the most important thing. So illusory things, what we have created, makes them fundamentally untrue. They are not satyam. They are all asatyam, isn't it? Suppose we have some imagination, something, it has come from our mind, or an appearance, it's illusion it is. It is illusion that is coming from that. So, suppose I put on some clothes, a dress of some particular drama actor. What does it mean? It means that in me, I have imposed something on me to present myself as something different. I put on another dress and I am presenting myself in another form as a king or a prime minister or a president or some doctor or whatever it is. I put on some clothes to present myself in that form. Similarly, in my original identity as Atma, which I am, I put on another identity with the mind and the senses, and I am presenting myself in that form to this world. And that is why, because of this only, this presenting in this way to the world, whereas I have got a base, my own base, but by dressing up I put on another form. So this superimposition on me, something else, is called adhyasam. Remember that word? Adhyasam. Adhyasam means that on your real identity, you have put on so many false identities and presenting yourself in that. That is called adhyasam. That's called adhyasam. Adhyasam and, but in order to have adhyasam, you have to have an adhishtanam, a base. Because if I want to put on another dress and present myself something else, I should be there first, isn't it? It's on me, I'm putting the new dress and presenting in another form. Similarly, the mind and the senses and whatever I'm talking through and presenting it as, that's all due to adhyasam it is. But because there is adhyasam, there must be an adhishtanam. Without adhishtanam, adhyasam cannot exist. But without adhyasam, adhishtanam can exist. That is the important principle there. So if we have come to that, we come to another important thing. When we talked about that, adhishtanam, adhyasam, two important things. So once you come to adhishtanam, adhishtanam is not under illusion. Adhyasam is under the illusory state, isn't it? So, once this, suppose I've dressed up like something, once I've removed that costume or dress, then I am in my true form, who I am, is it not? In my true form. Similarly, if I throw away this mind, throw away the senses, throw away that that adhyasam, what I have created in me, all designations. If I have thrown them away, then I am the true person. I am the true person. That's my true nature. So this is what, this whole thing, you know what Krishna did? Krishna put it in the two lines in the Bhagavad Gita. You will see there, Matstani Sarvabhudani Nachaham Teshu Avastida. Look at that verse, it is in the 9th chapter, 4th verse. When you read that verse, you won't capture this so easily. Matstani Sarvabhudani Nachaham Teshu Avastida. Krishna says there, all living entities, they exist in me, but I am not within them. Remember that? All living entities exist in me, but I am not in them. This is what it is. Exactly like this. Adhishtanam, Adhyasam. Matstani Sarvabhudani. I am present in everyone. Now, if you don't look at it in this way, what we have spoken so far, and if you start thinking, Matsani Sarvabhudani, Krishna is present in everyone. Nachaham Teshu Avastida. And I am not present in them. Krishna is saying that Matsani Sarvabhudani, Nachaham Teshu Avastida. Krishna is saying, I am not within them, but they are all present in me. They are all existing in me, but I am not present in them. That's how Krishna puts it. Isn't it? How would you understand that? This is the only way you can explain that verse. This is the only way you can explain that verse. That means, adhishtanam, that when you are in the realized state, when you have freed yourself from the influence of the mind and the senses, and you have completely come to the identification with the consciousness, in that state, all living entities are in you. You are in all living entities. Isn't it? All living entities are in you and you are in all the other living entities. That's what the first part. Matstani Sarvabhudani. Then secondly, Krishna is saying, Nachaham Teshu Avastida. Isn't it? Nachaham Teshu Avastida. He says that, but I am not within them. That means, Alma on its own is independent of everybody. That is what you have to understand. He is independent. Only in the spiritual platform I am in them. Bodily platform I am not in them. Only in the spiritual platform. That means once Matsani Sarvabhudani, that is easy to understand. Is it not? That Matsani Sarvabhudani, I am present in everyone, I have realized it. I am consciousness and consciousness is present in everyone. But Nachaham Teshu Avastida, but if you look at them, only if you are in this understanding, you know that you are in present in everyone, but not in the bodily level. Nachaham Teshu Avastida, I am not present in them through the body. Bodily level, I cannot have any relationship with anyone. That's why if you look at that verse, you will see 9th. Mayatatam idam sarvam jagat avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhudani nachaham teshu avastida. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. So, Atma's unique position. If you are talking about the mind, then we are all separate. We are all separate. If you are talking about Atma, we are present everywhere. We are present everywhere. So, that is what that distinction coming from. Mayadadam idam sarvam jagad avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhudani nachaham teshu avastida. Is that verse clear? That you have to look at that verse only in this way. Only then it will make some sense. Otherwise, how will you explain that verse? Only in the state of consciousness, pure consciousness, you are present in everyone, and that there you can say you are present everywhere. But if you come to the platform of the mind, if you see through the mind, you are different, I am different, he is different, everybody is different. I am not present in you, you are not present in me. If you come to the platform of the mind, if you come to the platform of the soul, you are present in everyone. That realization, that's what Krishna is talking about here. And so that is the important factor there. So Krishna is saying in these verses also that Shraddha has to fall in these places, in these different things. And when Atma is not within the Jiva in Jagat, Atma is not there, it means to say is that then the question will come. You see, what is Jiva? Jiva is the mind and the ego. Everything together is the Jiva, isn't it? Jiva is not Atma. So Krishna is saying, I am not with them means that Atma is not within the Jiva and Jagat. What it is saying is, it means that the Jiva, which is hidden from its original form of Atma by Maya's imagination. Maya has created that Jiva. Maya created that Jiva. Suppose that curtain is taken off between the Jiva and the Atma, then there is no separate Jiva and Atma. When that curtain takes away from between Jiva and the Atma, Jiva cannot exist anymore. Jiva cannot exist anymore. That individuality will not be real. Or that is why it is called Kalpana. It's called Kalpana, imagination, in other words. It's only a imagination. So by analysis you can see that we have understood that beyond the mind there is the existence of a higher principle. Higher principle, a life principle, that is Atma, isn't it? So in our day-to-day life, this Atma doesn't have much to do with. And day-to-day life is concerned, it's all the mind. Atma doesn't have anything to do with it because we don't identify with the Atma. We identify with the mind only. So all the day-to-day life is concerned, it's all the mind. Only at the time of death, that's when that Atma comes into action. For example, you can see there, eating, sleeping, getting married, having children, education, earning a living, running around from place to place, listening to music, watching the movies, reading novels. All our activities, whatever you take in this world, is called life, is it not? That's what we call it as life. Jivanam is the word in the Shastram. Jivanam. Jividam or Jivanam it is. So, various thoughts are behind it. That's why driving us into all these actions, what we are doing there, isn't it? And all these thoughts, they originate from the mind. They originate from the mind. So, and it is this mind again driving the senses into action. All these things what we talked about, what we do in life, day-to-day life, the impetus for doing all that, has the thoughts for that, has come from the mind. And the mind is the one which engages the senses in doing all these kind of things. And this continuously, all these things together, we call it as life, is it not? That's our daily life. So, and so that life is centered around the mind. The so-called life, what we talk about, is centered around the mind. And it cannot be centered around Atma. It cannot be centered around Atma. That we can understand easily. Because if you look in our own life, you will see that all our actions are centered around the mind. And the mind is a center of Jivatvam or Jivanam or life. So, and Atma, which does not have actions or thoughts, thoughts or actions, that conclusion is that when we talk about life, Jivitam or Jiva, Jivitam and Jiva is centered around the mind. Life is centered around the mind and Jiva also is centered around the mind. And both this Jividam and Jiva, that I am not in there. Krishna says, Atma is not there. Atma is not present there. In the Jividam and Jagat. That's what Krishna is saying there. Mayatadam idam sarvam jagad avyakta murtina matsani sarva bhutani na chaham teshu avasthida. That is the way Krishna has put it. That verse is a very interesting verse in the sense that it really makes a person to understand that this separation from the mind and the self, separation from the self and the mind. And if we don't separate, there is no spiritual life. Continuously absorbed in the mind and thinking that I am living a spiritual life, that is mental concoction it is. It's not spiritual life. You remember this word, mental concoction? Devotees always use it very freely. Prabhu, you are mentally speculating. Oh, it's a complete mental concoction, we say. We fire others like that. But we ourselves are concocting things. So what to do about it? But till we separate ourselves from the mind, as this verse is talking about, that's what Krishna is saying that verse to us. Mayatadam idam sarvam jagad avyakta murtina matsani sarvabhudani najaham teshu avasthida. That avasthida, avastha is this, that Atma doesn't have to get involved in the life of Jiva and Jagat. But Jiva and Jagat can only function when Atma is there. But unfortunately, Maya puts that curtain called mind in between the Jiva and the Atma. And that is why Jiva has come into life. If that curtain is removed, there won't be any Jiva anymore. Jiva cannot exist separately. Jiva's existence is over. So we'll discuss it next Saturday. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.